Hello and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
And I'm Cameron Regal.
And Cameron, we have a call sack episode. So I've been pretty lax about opening up the call sack and just playing general calls. This used to be a more regular occurrence, and then I just had so much good topics I had to get through. So we didn't do a call sack last season, but it was a specific topic, call in about the Super Mario Brothers movie. I did that with Malik. But the last actual call sack, just general call sack, 5 years ago, last did it season 7 of The Conversation in early April with David. So,
oh, wow.
It's been a while. So, we have quite a few calls to get through. Some of them are a bit old due to that. Some of them I did solicit when I announced this episode. I was like, hey, you can just call in and ask us any question you want about the DKU, Rare, Playtonic, Nintendo. This is your chance to get us to talk, even for but a few minutes, on what you want to hear about. So most of the calls did just come in the last couple of days, but we had a far healthier turnout than I anticipated. When I announced this, you know, we weren't getting any calls for about a day, and I was like, ooh, I might have stepped in it. We might not actually have much in the way of content. And then the floodgates just opened. Everybody, I guess, really thought about what they wanted to say, and they've been coming in up to an hour ago. So we're going to get into it, and we don't really want to waste a lot of time beforehand. But really quick, I did want to plug our merchandise store at dkvine.com/merchandise. So on TeePublic, you can find us on there as well. It's a new month. We have 2 new shirts in our merchandise store. We have the Conversation Season 12 album artwork by our good friend and fellow DK Vine staffer, Dustin. If you want to wear the Conversation on your torso, here's your chance. We also have the vintage. It's now vintage. It shouldn't feel like it's vintage. It feels like it's just yesterday, but it's been, 7 years? Yeah, 7 years since Ukulele came out. We have the DK Vine Ukulele inspired logo that was designed by you, Cameron, and actually was our primary logo on our website whenever you went to dkvine.com for the bulk of 2017. In fact, it's actually the logo on our website that was printed in the Playing with Superpower book released by Nintendo of America and Prima Games. So, kind of, yeah, immortalized.
It's what I mostly remember the logo for, because I'm just proud to have our work in an official Nintendo publication. And it's just extremely funny that it is in that weird window of time where the site had a aesthetic inspired by Donkey Kong Country 3, but because Ukulele was the recent release of discussion at that point, it had branding just in the logo.
Yeah, it's a proud moment for me because we got to smuggle in, because they printed screenshots of the website from both the turn of the century and what was then today. We smuggled in Banjo-Kazooie stuff, we smuggled in Ukulele stuff, and Sea of Thieves stuff in this official Nintendo book. And yeah. I feel like we're responsible for getting Banjo and Kazooie in Smash, because after that, Nintendo's like, nothing matters, let's just do it. But yeah, you can get that Ukulele style DK Vine shirt in honor of Ukulele's anniversary, just like we did the Sea of Thieves style DK Vine logo for Sea of Thieves 6th anniversary last month. So that's dkvine.com/merchandise. Also, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. We are actually making video content now, because we're actually YouTube partners now. And I just...
Yeah, we're making content and money.
Yeah, so I just released, as of last Friday, a Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze Easter Eggs and References video. It's the first in a series I would like to do for several DKU games, just going through, showing off all of the references and homages that are kind of hidden or you might easily miss if you're not looking for them. Tropical Freeze is kind of an easy one to start with because there's quite a bit in there, but it's not really in depth. If I ever do something like Grab by the Ghoulies, it'll probably be a 3-hour long video and it will break me. But we have that video. We have DKU Lore Tour videos. I'm just starting production on a new one of those. And yeah, like VOD archives, conversations, of course, you can just listen to it on YouTube. So we're actually doing things for the YouTube channel. Check us out, dkman.com/YouTube. And really quick, I want to say hello to our live stream because we do stream most conversation episodes live as we're recording them for our $5 and up patrons. We have SilicaCon, Snake Fighter 64 is back, Freezer's back. We got Porygon Q and Just Andre in there today. Freezer says, "You're not playing my Rare Cow episode call yet, are you?" I am playing it, Freezer, but that's just because I have all of the expectation in the world that you're going to call in again when we do the Rare Cow episode. So consider this an appetizer to that main course of Cow. So I didn't mean to imply we're going to be eating the Rare Cow, but we're playing a wide assortment of calls today. Snake Fighter 64, I did select one of your old calls as well. And if you would like to call the DK Vine hotline, it is always open day and night, no matter your time zone. Just dial 1-202-630-VINE. It's 8463. Generally, we solicit calls for a specific topic at hand. But occasionally, and we leave this open to the public, you know, occasionally people might want to just call in and talk about whatever. And we won't select those calls per se, but we will hold on to them. And then when these general CallSec episodes inevitably roll around, we may dust those off and play them. No guarantees. And sometimes things get lost in all the hubbub of doing the prep work. But we're playing some older calls, and we're playing some really recent calls, like fresh out of the oven, the last hour. So, Cameron, this first call came in right after that last General CallSec episode in April 2019. So, we're just kind of jumping right in. Is this going to be relevant to today? I don't know. It's 5 years old, but it's vintage. It's a blast from the past. Let's go ahead and play call number one.
Also, in regards to the last episode where you took all my fucking calls, I did forget to talk about Bluster because I wasn't thinking about Bluster. I like Bluster because he's like the antithesis to DK, but whatever the fuck. I don't really, you know, I like Bluster as a foil in like a Squidward sort of way. He's the Squidward to DK and Diddy's SpongeBob and Patrick. Basically, that's how you gotta see it. So, yeah, especially I'm Rio Bluster. But actually, if you want to think about it in the cartoon show, man, I'm fucking talking about it. Deal with it, Ohio. Deal with it, bro. It exists. Ain't shit you can do about it. Actually, Bluster Barrel Works is an incredibly... They chop down trees. Right? Constantly. And with that... so that they can make the barrels, and it's an ironworks industry because they need to make the iron to wrap the barrels in. So, you know how much smog and bullshit is flowing around on Donkey Kong, on Congo Bongo? a lot. So there's your climate change. Yeah, man. There it is. So I suggest we shut down Bluster Barrel Works. And, you know, that's how we deal with it. Because, I mean, they seem to be the only, I mean, it's the only source of revenue that's alive. Because there's a constant stream of bananas. And, Dunk kind of eats the bananas. So he eats the food source and the currency. So, you know. Yeah. Makes sense if you really think about it. And, you know, in the games, you know, this sponsor, I mean, after the Great Ape War, you know, and I think when the pollution kind of fixed itself out.
Rambles off and hangs up. Thank you for the call. I think that was Smash, if my memory is serving me well here. Smash called in quite a bit back in the day. Haven't heard them quite a while now, but I said it was a blast from the past. It's a smash from the past. Thank you for the call 5 years later. I don't remember what this... it was in regard to what prompted this, but I do feel like generally I come up against this quite a bit, Cameron, this desire from people who are, you know, big fans of the cartoon. Bluster Kong should be in the games. Bluster Kong should be canonized.
It's funny we're coming back to this call post Return to Crocodile Isle, where I feel like you've like softened a lot on the DKC cartoon by association.
I did this whole episode with Malik last season where I said, you know, I basically made my peace with it. It's not something I will ever enjoy as like, yeah, I'm a fan of that. But I'm also not going to chafe that other people are fans of it. I was already making my peace with it back during the era of this call, if not beforehand, when so many people used the cartoon as a way to win over advocates for King K. Rool to get into Super Smash Brothers. So my philosophy towards the cartoon is it's not for me. It's not the sort of Donkey Kong Country adaptation that really gets my motor running, but I can also respect that a lot of people do enjoy it and appreciate it. And, you know, I may not think that Bluster Kong is canon, but if they did decide to somehow incorporate him in the games, I don't think I would have a problem with it, because I do think he could serve a role that other Kongs don't. He's kind of the, you know, snobs versus the slobs sort of mentality that's a very easy trope to rely on, and I think Bluster Kong could be a fun sort of, you know, Squidward was the comparison I believe Smash used, but I go for Niles Crane, you know, somebody who's very uptight, somebody who's finicky and holds their nose up at the more lowbrow wants and desires of our protagonist. So I think you could do a lot of fun things with Bluster, but the problem is there are so many characters I want back and I want to be used on a regular basis that if we start adding in people like Bluster, then it just... I don't want to push any other characters out.
I feel like Bluster is a character that, like, if he appeared in a Donkey Kong game, it would mean that there are more than five Kongs allowed to appear in a Donkey Kong game.
Right. Yeah, again, I would be fine with it, but this is also imagining a future that sees regular releases in the Donkey Kong series, you know, more than one a decade.
Okay. I guess I would posit the question, Hayao, if we got, like, another game that had, like... like, let's say, like, had every, like, Kong scene up to this point in it, would that, like, make you a lot warmer toward Bluster just being one of the gang?
Yeah.
He's not like taking away a spot from anyone.
That's it. And I don't even mind taking away spots so much as just this complete abandoning of hope that any characters of a certain vintage will ever appear again. And that's why just stuff like Swanky and Chunky in the Super Mario Brothers movie has done a lot to sort of booster my, I guess, aspirations for the series going forward, where I feel like, I think a lot of fans get it in their head that there's a implicit in character embargo on the Donkey Kong cast, with exceptions. And I don't think there's any actual embargo in place. I think what we're running up against nowadays is there just hasn't been much in a way of Donkey Kong games since Donkey Kong Country Returns. And so...
Yeah. And in the ones we have gotten, it's not like there's like much of a utility for, say, like Candy and Wrinkly Kong to appear if they're not serving a... like a gameplay or like a menu purpose.
Yeah.
In the very few games we've gotten.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Retro's games are very utilitarian in the way they utilize characters, and we can get, you know, into some other point if there were actual any embargoes in place or if it was just Nintendo's corporate philosophy sort of.
I mean, to what I just said, like some of the characters I just mentioned are only in the Payon games,
right?
Because they found a way to work them into menus or side modes.
Right, exactly. And so whatever was going on with Retro and, you know, purportedly Tanabe's decrees, I don't think it's actual any hard rule in place. I think, especially post-Smash Ballot, there is a greater awareness of the popularity of the Donkey Kong cast. And the biggest problem I see all the time on social media now, and it's something I've wanted to address, and this 5-year-old call from Smash is apparently giving me the platform. I see a lot from a lot of like Donkey Kong fans, high profile Donkey Kong fans on social media. And there's a lot of hand-wringing about they haven't used K. Rool since Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. K. Rool's barely in anything. He was in a calendar, and that's it. And I'm just like, well, how could they have used him? Because there hasn't been any games to use him in yet. And the biggest problem we're running into is not Nintendo doesn't want to use any of the vintage Rare characters. It's... there are no current art assets for those vintage Rare characters that they feel comfortable using. So exceptions are sometimes made, like that Donkey Kong calendar. They did have King K. Rool for the month of April. Happy April, everyone. But it was an old Jungle Climber render because that's the most recent render from the Donkey Kong series they could pull from. And so... it's not an avoidance of these characters. It's just there are no reliably high-res art assets to pull from because they were not in Returns or Tropical Freeze. So I think people are getting their wires crossed a bit about the current status quo versus what was happening at Retro versus the Payon era and so forth. They're all different circumstances, and I think it's just a matter of we haven't had reliable new Donkey Kong games since Returns came out, honestly, and production kind of slowed and centralized at Retro. And then when Retro was done with Tropical Freeze, it just entered this behind-the-scenes turmoil, and we're still waiting on a new Donkey Kong game. So all that being said, I'm hopeful for the future of the Donkey Kong cast. And sure, if we get to the point where we have a steady stream of new games, rotate in characters. And I don't want to see every character in every game. Part of the fun of the olden days was, oh, okay, they've rotated out this character. They've introduced new characters. Who's going to make the cut? Which new characters am I going to fall in love with? And I think that's a healthy way of going about it. So sure. Sure, eventually I'll get to the point where I'm like, yeah, canonize Bluster Kong. I would love to see Nintendo's interpretation of this character created in outside media. Sure, do it. But first of all, let's get our ducks in a row and, you know, make sure Donkey Kong is on steady ground, stable footing, before we just start going nuts with characters new and, I guess, from outside media and not use the ones that we're so desperate to see again.
So that's one call down.
Yeah, yeah, I know. 23 more to go, Jared. Thank you for the call, Smash. Wherever you are these days, I hope life is treating you well. All right, let's play our second call.
Kyle and whoever's going to be co-hosting on whatever call sack episode this is probably going to turn up on. This is Kara again, Kara Kong, Falcon DevOwl, whatever the hell you call me. So I'm going back through and listening in on season 6 of The Conversation. I'm trying to just catch up because, you know, I hadn't listened in for a while, as I stated in my last phone call, and B, because I'm trying to find the lost episode, which I will find it, Heil. I will find the lost episode. You can bet on it. But anyway, coming back, listening to the character witness on Dixie Kong, and, you know, you guys were lamenting about how there's no real female perspective on Dixie Kong for people that were calling in. So, you know, it's about a year and some change late, like, but, you know, I can still give my perspective on Dixie Kong, right? It's not too late, right? So, Dixie Kong for me, I was one of those, people who had a phase when I was younger about how I didn't want to hang, you know, have the female characters or anything like that. That was girly, that was gross, girly, gross, yuck. But, I grew out of that later. But with Dixie Kong, it was different. Like, Dixie Kong was fun. I loved to play as Dixie Kong. Like, to me, she was the epitome of what a video game girl character should have been, which was not super girly. Like, yeah, she wore pink, and, you know, pink equals bad when you're trying to be a, you know, tomboyish girl who wasn't even that tomboyish. So I don't know what the heck I was trying to prove. But she was my favorite character and has still been my favorite character and one of the shining examples of what a female character should be. Like to me, I wouldn't say she made me empowered, but she definitely made me feel validated, I guess. Which I guess maybe that is empowered. Way more than I guess than Candy Kong ever did. Later on, even though I never really played Metroid, I kind of felt the same way about Samus. So it was kind of along that same line, where it was just like, yeah, she's a girl, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that she kicks ass and is fun and has a really cool mechanic that makes everyone want to play her way more than the boy character. But anyway, that's my perspective. Way better perspective than I guess. Don't ask me about Humba. Don't ask me about Humba. That's a different topic. Different topic. All right. Bye.
Well, thank you for the call, Kara. I'm so sorry it took so long to get to it, and you have not found the missing episode of season 6, but fear not, for nobody has found it all these years later. There is still a missing episode of The Conversation season 6, people. There are clues strewn about, and if you put those clues together, you can find the missing episode of The Conversation season 6, an entire episode of The Conversation nobody's ever heard. And the first person to do so and prove it on social media will win an autographed copy of Sea of Thieves number 1, signed by the author, Jeremy Whitley? I forget now, it's been so long. But yeah, Dixie's great. We're a very pro Dixie Kong group of people here at DK Vine. You know, I say Diddy's my favorite video game character, but the truth is Dixie is basically tied with Diddy, and sometimes I think more highly of Dixie. I think that Dixie is such a fun character, and I don't just mean in the way she plays, although that is very true as well. You know, I was compiling a lot of Tropical Freeze footage, and one of my favorite animations in the Switch version of Tropical Freeze in funky mode, but not using funky, so it's seldom seen and seldom talked about, is the idle animation when Donkey Kong is paired with Dixie and they're playing the Switch together, and Donkey Kong is getting ready to do the punch, because in the funky mode, they're actually playing Tropical Freeze on the Switch. It's kind of this, like, man in the mirror moment, but Donkey Kong is getting ready to do the, like, Jungle Beat style barrage of punches on the boss, and Dixie will just grab the Joy-Cons from him to do it herself. And I'm like, that is Dixie. That is just who her character is. She is the most jumping in headfirst without thinking about the consequences Kong. She's the only Kong when the Snomads are approaching Donkey Kong Island where she seems happy that this is happening because she knows there's a great adventure ahead. She, I mean, she's almost adventurous to the point of, like, harming others. And where Diddy is always a little bit more trepidatious, he wants to be a hero, but, you know, he thinks a little bit. He looks before he leaps, and Dixie's just like, nah, it'll be okay. And I love that dichotomy between them. And I don't know, she's a wonderful character, and I am glad that her future seems secure in the Donkey Kong series, that we're not sitting here and saying, oh, you know, we can't have Bluster Kong in the series because we're waiting for Dixie Kong to come back. I think Dixie's pretty safe.
I still remember that time before Tropical Freeze, like how scary it was. Like there, it felt very real, like we might never see Dixie again. And even that moment watching the Tropical Freeze trailer, there was this, like, roller coaster moment of finding out, oh, the Kremlings aren't still back, but Dixie is,
yeah.
And just, like, completely turning the mood around.
It really did. I mean, that was, like, it was kind of a, oh, the Kremlings aren't back. Oh, Dixie's back! Yeah, I don't care anymore! Oh, David Wise is back! The hell with the Kremlings! So, yeah, the like Tropical Freeze rollout was pretty hubris in retrospect. Just because of how it kind of, we got the disappointment out of the way right away, and then it was just a steady trail of treats for us as the game rolled out as the day went on. But yeah, Dixie's in a theme park. She's featured, you know, however minorly, she's still part of it. And it's just great to see that. I think Nintendo recognizes and realizes that Dixie is an important part of the series, even though she wasn't in that first Donkey Kong Country game. Because sometimes you have that first game bias of, well, only things in the first game really count, and then everything in the sequels are sort of ephemeral. It's like, no.
Something that Rare themselves fell prey to with DK64.
Yeah.
Which was another thing that made it feel like a very real possibility that Dixie's star could just, like, completely fall.
It was one of Rare's major missteps. When I say Rare, I mean, it was the Donkey Kong 64 team's major misstep, where they thought, we should just go back to basics. And, I mean, they didn't go back to basics, because they introduced a bunch of new shit in that game, but I say this as somebody who does like Tiny Kong, but it did Dixie a disservice to just completely ignore her in that game.
I'd also say, like, it's not the DK64 team's fault that that ended up being the last major Donkey Kong game released under Rare.
Yeah, of course, had Rare stuck with the franchise, we're going to see Dixie again in Diddy Kong Pilot, and I think she would have just bounced back because the popularity for the character was undeniable. But, you know, Donkey Kong 64 is only 5 years after Donkey Kong Country and only 4 years after Donkey Kong Country 2. So there wasn't this perspective necessarily of, no, Dixie is the third most vital character in this series. It was just, well, let's do something new. Let's just rely on some core elements from the first game, maybe bring in a couple things from the sequels, but otherwise just fill it out with new stuff. And, you know, it's a shame because I feel like Donkey Kong 64, for all of the issues I have with it on a fundamental level, the biggest issue I have with it on a conceptual level is it kind of did Dixie and Kitty a little bit dirty. So, Andre in the live stream says, yeah, you did a bad job dropping the clues, Heil. A puzzle that no one can solve other than the person who devised the solution is a badly designed puzzle. You know, I don't know if I agree about that, because the Riddler fancies himself quite the puzzler. He fancies himself a genius, and yet Batman is always solving his puzzles and throwing him in Arkham. So, I think I'm a better supervillain mastermind than Edward Nygma, because I haven't been thrown in any asylum. Checkmate. Checkmate's something else in DC, though, and so is the puzzler. So, anyway, thank you for the call, Kara. All right, Cameron, you ready for call number three?
Let's do it.
All right.
一封文件尚未领取，如需查询，请按九。 将有专人为您服务。中国驻美国大使馆，你好，您有一封文件尚未领取，如需查询，请按九，将有专人为您服务。
There might have been some spam in the call. Spam or a wrong number, I'm not sure. I don't speak the language, unfortunately, but I have to say...
Human people don't usually put background music to their calls.
Yeah, but that was the part I liked. That was like a relaxing spa day, and I felt at ease. I felt at peace with myself.
I guess I should say, unless you're Matt Corona, he would put in that editing effort.
He would. So, while that was not on topic, and I probably shouldn't have played it because what the hell, that little musical sting at the end made me feel good, and I want more of that in our calls. Honestly, if you could do that for me, callers, if you could put some nice harps or some other, like maybe pan flutes. I love pan flutes. I love a good pan flute. Get some of that in there, and I'm going to feel great. It's going to, because usually when we play the calls on the conversation, both me and the co-host, we're kind of circling the drain. We're exhausted. It's 2 to 4 hours in. We're sweaty. We're disheveled. We're hungry. We need to go to the bathroom. And it's just like, can we be done with it? Jeff, infamously, whenever he does these with me, loathes taking the calls. And so to have that little pick-me-up, bravo. Thank you. Spam call from several years ago. All right. Let's play the fourth call. Hopefully I did a better job of screening these going forward.
Hi, this is Jennifer. I just wanted to say something because of something you said in one of your recent episodes. You said, you mentioned the idea of how we would love a track in Mario Kart that is an homage to the Rare era, but let's be realistic and temper our expectations. And my only just thing I wanted to say about that is just, why? If we never talk about what we want, and we never ask for it in any forum, we're certainly never going to get it, because Nintendo's not going to do it on their own. That's the only reason K. Rool and Banjo got into Smash, because A, they put in an open form of contact, but B, because people talked about it. And there's nothing wrong with talking about your pie-in-the-sky wishes. There's no need to tamp it down, because it'll never happen, because it could happen. So, yeah. Just, I wanted to say my piece about that. Have a good night.
Thank you for the call, Jennifer, SnakeFighter64, and a live stream chat. Hello. So, yeah, this is, I guess, in relation to Cameron. Remember Moeb DK?
Oh, I sure do. That time when we were seemingly recording an endless number of Mario Kart Tour episodes until the game finally died.
I think it's not dead yet. I'm going to get to rank 80. Okay, I've got to get to rank 80 before they pull the plug. So don't be putting that bad juju out there about the game dying. It's still active, and I'm at rank 74. I have a good chance of hitting rank 75 come Wednesday. I got to get to rank.
Okay, not dead. Just chilling.
Just chilling. Chillin'. Yeah, just chilling. Just relaxing by the pool. So. I see your point, Jennifer. I don't think we were being like dismissive, like we're just never going to argue for it or fight for it. We're just being realistic. Because at the time, we were operating under the idea, because we just had the Yoshi's Island track being added to Tour. And we thought, you know, okay, if they actually are doing a Donkey Kong style track, it's probably not going to be based on the rare assets from Donkey Kong Country, just for the simple virtue of they are not current assets, nor are there anybody working for Nintendo who worked on those games. I think the biggest problem post-buyout, but especially as the Donkey Kong series has just gone on post-Rare, is there have been new creative teams working on Donkey Kong games, and they've developed a style for Donkey Kong Country that is evolved and separate from what Rare laid down so many years ago. So I think it was just a matter of they're not going to do this because it's just not Nintendo's style to do it, to like deliberately homage a look from a team that is no longer affiliated with Nintendo in any direct capacity. And like we've seen like other people try to recreate that Rare aesthetic, but it's usually been in things like Smash, those early Smash games, for the N64, Melee. You know, we got the Sakurai's team kind of creating a Rare style look for Donkey Kong's three arenas in those games. But nowadays, it's going to look like retro's Donkey Kong games because that's the style, that's the look they've decided upon. Now, I do agree with your principle that we should make known what we want as a fandom, just like we did with King K. Rool, just like we did with wanting Banjo and Kazooie and Smash, because it does yield results so long as it's done in a positive manner. I don't necessarily agree with how some fans go about it in a let's burn the world down around us and like hold our breath until our face turns purple kind of thing if we don't get what we want. I think there's a healthy balance to be had by being a healthy, well-reasoned member of a fan community versus the more petulant members out there.
Yeah, I feel like there's a difference between like feeling free to express a want for something and say like replying to every single post on Nintendo's social media accounts with "We're Donkey Kong."
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of times all you're doing is just making life difficult for the social media people working for the big companies, and they have enough on their plate these days as it is. But yeah, I mean, you see it with Banjo-Kazooie merchandise, where whenever a new Banjo-Kazooie product is announced, people will just go scorched earth on it because it's not a new Banjo-Kazooie game. And I understand the frustration that a lot of Banjo-Kazooie fans feel. I do. I'm among them. I feel it too. But you know, when people like Fangamer or even First Four Figures or now Funko, apparently, when they're announcing Banjo-Kazooie product, you know, they just made a deal with Rare's licensing team who have a great affection for these products. And it's not on them that we don't have a new Banjo-Kazooie game yet. So, like, there are a lot of just notions that people get in their heads that if we destroy the Banjo-Kazooie merchandise, you know, we'll get a new Banjo-Kazooie game. It doesn't work like that. It's just be glad that Banjo-Kazooie isn't forgotten. We can express what we want without making the careers, the jobs of people miserable along the way. So I don't know. Like, I feel like, sure, like maybe positivity can only get you so far, but I would rather, you know, go about it that way than going about it the way I used to go about it, which was very much, I am going to rail against everything. I'm going to rage against the machine. The machine in this case being Nintendo in the buyout era, you know, because, yeah, I was in the wrong. And part of it is just going through these cycles, sort of getting to the point where you kind of understand them and coming to peace with it, coming to terms with the fact that nothing from your youth stays stagnant. Things will evolve and change, and whatever you're hoping to recapture, that magic will never be the same because you will never be 8 to 12 years old again. But also that, yeah, I don't want to be a negative source of a fandom. I don't want to, like, just rage. I don't want to be ragey clickbait. And that being said, I would love more direct homages to the Rare era. But again, I think this speaks to the Bluster Kong call we took from Smash. I feel like we've just got to get Donkey Kong back on stable ground first and have that baseline. And the baseline is the Retro era, but just have it be established. And then you can do fun throwback stuff. And we can advocate for it in a way that doesn't just feel like shouting into the wind because we don't have a new Donkey Kong game yet. So I think it's just kind of waiting it out while also expressing how much we do love it and would like to see it in a way that isn't off-putting to the people who are actually in charge of the IP. But I don't know. You're right, because the Smash ballot was a very unique opportunity. And we very rarely get those opportunities handed to us. You know, those direct outlets. Hey, what do you want in these games? We don't often get that. And I do think sometimes creators do have their ear to the ground a little bit, and there's a clear cause and effect there. I think we saw that with Tropical Freeze, honestly. I think Retro did course correct in some aspects of their presentation of Donkey Kong because they did listen to the fans. And that's why Tropical Freeze did so many things right that we had problems with Returns. Not to say I don't love Returns, but, you know, we did have some issues with it. So, yeah, I just think it's a tightrope walk. And having the platform we do, however small and modest it is with DK Vine, I'm trying to walk that tightrope as carefully as I can without swaying one way or another too far in the wrong direction. All right, but thank you for the call. See you in the chat. And I will start the next call if you're ready, Cameron.
Yep, let's do it.
Hey, so I'm calling just as sort of a random idea that I had. You know, I was watching the new Indiana Jones recently, and I know that, you know, a lot of DKC is sort of based off of Indiana Jones. And, you know, watching a sort of 80-year-old Harrison Ford go on, you know, sort of wild adventure just made me think, like, we really could use, like, a Cranky Kong game where, you know, maybe even sort of, like, you know, going off of this movie where, like, you know, maybe we de-age him a bit so we could see, you know, outside of just the old-style Donkey Kong arcade, you know, like, what did Cranky Kong look like in his youth at the time mixed with, you know, maybe something in the present day? Just, you know, I think it would be really fun to have, you know, not just a where he's a playable character, but a full-on, like, Cranky Kong adventure. So I feel like that would be a cool concept for a game. That's all, I guess.
Well, thank you for the call. I think you're the first person to watch the new Indiana Jones and just say, yeah, more of that. It was fine. It was a fine movie. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was just kind of there. But I've always wanted a Cranky Kong Country game of some sort. I remember back in the day, back in the 90s, one of my ideas that Rare could do was Donkey Kong Country Zero, where it was starring a young or like middle-aged Cranky Kong before he like fully became Cranky Kong. And, you know, Tropical Freeze actually using Cranky Kong as the fourth playable character, it kind of diluted or dulled my desire for it, but I still would really like something like that. And yeah, like even the concept of maybe alternating between time periods, you've got Cranky Kong, and then you can have like flashbacks to young, Donkey Kong Sr. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think you could do a lot with the concept of like a Donkey Kong Eras game. Maybe it would require Nintendo to actually address Donkey Kong Jr. and whether the current Donkey Kong is Donkey Kong Jr. grown up or not. And they probably don't want to do that, but you could skirt around it too, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it is something that like seems like a third rail for Nintendo. Of like, yeah, this is part of the lore of Donkey Kong, but we only talk about it when we absolutely have to.
Yeah.
But like, going in the spirit of our previous call, like, we don't have to pretend we don't want it. I'm kind of thinking, it kind of reminds me of a while back, somebody made like a mock-up of what if Donkey Kong Country used the Miyamoto design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about just how neat that looked, and like, yeah, I would like to see this sort of like mishmash of treatments of DK all in the same game and kind of calling attention to how far things have come.
Yeah, I think you'd even maybe even frame it like Cranky Kong is sitting on the front stoop of the cabin and he's like going into this long-winded rant to Donkey and Diddy and Dixie maybe, and he's just like, let me tell you about one of my adventures that you've never heard about before, and it's just a big extended flashback. That'd be a fun way to frame it.
And everybody else falls asleep immediately.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, you're right. Like, there is just too much of a bifurcation when it comes to the eras of Donkey Kong. I want to see stuff maybe mashed up a little bit more. I want to see this full-on embracing of the totality of Kong, you know? Like, let's get some arcade stuff in there. Let's get the Rare era stuff in there. Let's get Jungle Beat in there and Payon and Retro. And like, let's not be afraid to just give everything this warm, big brother's bear hug of embracing the full history and not shying away from any of it. We don't need to reinvent Donkey Kong every single time. I don't think Nintendo is doing that anymore, but it's just been a matter of
the concrete's already poured on that theme park.
Yes, exactly. Like, thankfully, thankfully that theme park is a thing, and it kind of just says, this is what Donkey Kong has to be, because we've already invested millions of dollars into it. Sorry, whoever's doing the next Donkey Kong game. If it is Nintendo, EPD, you know, you're kind of stuck, but that's okay. You can just add to it. There's no shame in that. Somebody's got to make a new Donkey Kong game, though, so, you know, get to it. But, yeah, I you know, like, again, my dream is we could have a bounty of Donkey Kong games, a cornucopia full of Kong titles to choose from. I want to kind of get back to the buyout era a little bit, but with more of a like, this is the main game, just so you know, here are the side games now that you're interested in Donkey Kong again. And I think we were kind of lacking that with the buyout era. It was kind of like, here's Donkey Konga, the first thing out of the gate, And here's all of these remakes on the Game Boy Advance, and now here's these weird like King of Swing games, and then now here's Jungle Beat. This is the main game, but it also uses the bongo, so you're probably confused. There is just no clear direction for Donkey Kong during that era, but I would like to get back to when we had just so many Donkey Kong games coming out of different styles and varieties. And I think having a core game will help facilitate that, especially now that there is interest in Donkey Kong again, thanks to the Super Mario Brothers movie and the upcoming park. So yeah, get a Cranky Kong spinoff in there. Like, let's go crazy with it. Let's just get nuts. I want to be surprised. I think that's my biggest thing. Like, give me something I never thought about asking myself. And I realize I have asked for a Cranky Kong game. So, you know, surprise me, you know, give me a Clapper the Seal game. Didn't expect that, but yeah, hell yeah. Let's rock and roll. All right. Thank you for the call. The next call, Cameron, is a two-parter. Let's go ahead and play call 6 and call 7 back-to-back.
Hello, hi, it's me, Carl Max. You might remember me as the sort of priest character from the Midnight Mass episode on Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze. And I felt I had to respond to the new conversation that has come out, the new evidence that's come out about Cocoa Pebbles Boulder Dash. So you say this in the episode, I think sort of as an homage to the sort of fundamental character of the Midnight Mass, that this is shaking your faith in the spiritual underpinnings of the universe, and I'd have to agree. I would say this is either, from a certain perspective, this is either very good or very bad. So number one, if our beloved Barrel Maze truly came first and Boulder Dash was created out of its assets, which I would agree seems to be the most likely theory, then this implies a sort of like religious transformation. I would think that Donkey Kong religion, and specifically as it relates to Donkey Kong Country Barrel Maze, which I think we would all agree is the sort of central underpinning of our faith, it's always been a sort of closed off positive religion, sort of similar to ethnic religions. The Druze faith could be an example, Judaism. In that they sort of, they service their own group. It's very tied in with a specific sort of person, but they don't try to proselytize. They don't try to spread the religion out. And I've been comfortable with that. I've been comfortable, simply practicing faith. But if the Barrel Maze formula can be spread to other IPs, if it can be spread to something as iconic as the Flintstones, then that implies a spiritual mission for us. That we have to spread the good news. We have to expand the faith. We have to become a proselytizing religion, much like some of the major world religions, as I've talked about in the last episode, like Christianity, like Islam, like Buddhism, and I would be willing to take that mantle. I think that if that is what Barrel Maze is calling us to do, to spread the word of fantastic isometric flash gameplay, that's what we must do. There, of course, is another option. Seems maybe not particularly likely, but maybe Cocoa Pebbles came first. Maybe Boulder Dash came first. I mean, it's possible. Skyrock Interactive made a lot of brand deals with candies. Cocoa Pebbles is basically candy. It's all sugar. And perhaps Barrel Maze could have been a repurposing of that, although in my opinion, they would have improved it. Like, it fits much more cohesively. But maybe they just knew how they were founding the product. It's possible. I don't think exactly that's possible. And if that is, then the nature of our faith, the nature of this game is different than what we previously conceived. The essence is fundamentally of the Flintstones and not Donkey Kong. And this has caused religious schisms elsewhere. Things like the Council of Nicaea, the Council of Chalcedon, have been about the purpose was to like determine Jesus' true nature. And these were very granular debates that really shaped religious history. And this is, I think, even more fundamental. Hey, it's Colin Ask again. Calling again very briefly just to finish my larger point, which is that if it's true that Barrel Maze was originally incarnated in the form of Cocoa Pebbles, and I hope that more research will be done into this, but maybe we'll one day know the answer for sure. But if it's true, if this is true, then I think we need to accept that. I think we need to realize that we have been given great insight into the nature of the object of our faith, of this wonderful game about rolling around an isometric plane, and that if it's true, then I will become Fred Flintstone's acolytes, then I will eat Cocoa Pebbles every day, and that I will and I will say one final prayer for Fred Flintstone. Yabba dabba doo!
Cameron, do you ever worry that you've helped found a cult by mistake?
Well, I don't know, but I guess it wouldn't be the first time that evidence of cavemen has caused friction with the religion.
Yeah, I sometimes stay up at night or get jostled from a slumber in a cold sweat with the fear that DK Vine's ultimate endgame is like a mass Jonestown style scenario. Just because we're a pretty weird bunch. And I say that usually lovingly, but I do worry that sometimes when you look at history, you chart small, close-knit groups like us throughout the ages. They generally end one way. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure, you know, we don't end up a cult. But I get calls like this, and I'm like, maybe I haven't been that careful. So, no, thank you for the call. I think Josh and I pretty much determined that Barrel Maze did come first. That the Cocoa Pebbles Boulder Dash, well, it has a far greater name, love that pun, it had to have come second. And I think Mario Wiki, they've looked into it after the fact, and they have concurred with us that, yes, Barrel Maze did come first. So enjoy your Cocoa Pebbles or your Fruity Pebbles, which I prefer. But you can enjoy them in good health knowing that Barrel Maze isn't built on a foundation of lies, that it was Barrel Maze's integrity that Fred Flintstone and crew ran with and used for their own vainglorious purposes. So, yeah, you know, it was one of the big revelations.
Oh, I can't imagine the Flintstones using something else as a base.
It's a living. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the calls, I should say. All right, let's play call number 8.
Hey, Heil, this is Frieza. I'm calling in April 1st right now. I want to get my call in nice and early for the eventual Rare Cow episode. I'm sure you'll already have this website open when you do the video, do the podcast, but just to be safe, I would like you to go to raregamer.co.uk/games/rare-cows-list. It is the Rare Cow Spotter's Guide, one of my favorite pages on the internet. And I just want you to look at the fact that the first one here is the Vultureville cow. You can see it. It's got the spots on it, unmistakable piss yellow color. It's great. And if you scroll down further, you'll see the Mickey Speedway USA secret track cow. It is the exact same cow, except it has a little space helmet on. It's the same color palette, the same pattern in general. These are the same cow. This isn't a drawing. This is the same cow. Why do you think this isn't part of the DKU when it was clearly established in Conker's Pocket Tales? Also, interestingly enough, there are two types of rare cows. There are the ones with all the spots, and there's the other one that has a more simple two-tone kind of design. The one you'll see for Mickey's Racing Adventure, the second one on the list. That is the one that we see more often in art, like the graffiti in Perfect Dark for Game Boy Color. We also see that in Slipside Ride in Donkey Kong Country Game Boy Color. We see that in the Utah stage of Mickey's Speedway. And it looks like that's the Spiller's Harbor one in Grunty's Revenge. That's interesting that there is, in the DKU, the two-tone, non-spotted cow is the one we more often see resembled in artwork. That really makes you think, doesn't it? What is the significance behind all this? Can you admit the rare cow is DKU? It is. The only reason you think it isn't is because you are pig-headed and annoying and wrong, and I don't know why we put up with you. You clearly don't understand the DKU like you should do, honestly, when you get fired, Heil, someone will replace you that will know what they're talking about. Love you.
So, yeah, I got this call. It was still March 31st for me, but for Freezer, it was April 1st. And we're caught up to the present almost, as you can see. But, yeah, Freezer obviously wanted me to save this call for the inevitable Beastorary Rare Cow episode. But I don't know when that's going to be, Cameron. And I just imagine that Freezer will have so much more to say about the Rare Cow when we get there. So Freezer might even be my co-host for that episode, let's be honest. Let's all just put that on the table right now. That's probably how it's going to shake out. So I was like, let's play this call now, and I'll state my case, because I might lose Freezer as part of the audience if, you know, I don't address this now, and I don't state my case for why Mickey's Racing Adventure is not classified as a DKU game. Cameron, you know my reasoning for this, right?
Well, I assume it's because, looking at this screenshot, there are multiple Rare Cows,
yes,
in Conker's Pocket Tales.
Yeah, so basically the Rare Cow, it's not an individual character. It's part of a species. And this is kind of a DKU gray area where we've never really run up against this except for the issue of the Rare Cow. Like, we've never had, say, a Naughty appear in a game that's not DKU, because Banjo-Kazooie, of course, following a through line of Banjo and Tip-Tup being introduced in Diddy Kong Racing, DKU. There were some armies in Conker's Pocket Tales, but again, Conker, Diddy Kong Racing, DKU. So, you know, would a species being in a game make something DKU? The closest we've come that's not the Rare Cow is Chained Kong being in Super Mario RPG. But we've determined that, well, Chained Kong is not a DKU character. Chained Kong is definitely a Kong, as is Gorilla, but they didn't debut in a DKU game. And so because they're not an individual character that is native born to the DKU, we can't, in good consciousness, in good faith, say Super Mario RPG is DKU.
Yeah, I know I've seen like a lot of contention over the years over the quote unquote no drones rule. But like, because people ask, like, well, if a Kremling appears in a game, that's a Donkey Kong concept. Why doesn't that count? And it's not a rule to keep games with Kremlings out of the DKU. It's like for these weird edge cases, so that, say, like, people can't argue, well, there's a human in the, like, that looks like a Steve Mayles character in this other game. Therefore, like, it's DKU because they look like the humans and Ghoulies.
Yeah. Yeah, humans. Think about humans. Like, what would be a DKU human? That's the rough one. So, yeah, because, especially the Rare Cow, I mean, they're cows, right? So, yes, they're cows in a very specific art style, but it is an edge case, like you just said, Cameron. So I think Mickey's Racing Adventure and Super Mario RPG are the two edge cases we'd have to look at and say, well, does that really count? We've said no. But to your point, Cameron, if we ever got something a bit more contentious, and let's be honest, something with a bit more meat on its bone than those skinny Rare Cows, then it would be worthy of reconsidering. And we'd have to go back to the table and say, okay, if this game, we have to consider it DKU because it's an open and shut case, even if it's only a species, a type of character that's native born to the DKU, like a Kremling. If we're going to make the allowance there, then we have to grandfather in Chained Kong. We have to grandfather in the errant Rare Cows. But we haven't reached that point yet. We're always sort of shoring up the rules as we go along. And people think, oh, Heil, you're such a bastard man because you won't let Jet Force Gemini in the DKU. You won't let what's another good one? You won't let.
Well, the examples are becoming fewer and farther between, because the thing is, if we can come up with a reason to make something DKU, it usually becomes DKU, because I feel like the unsaid like motivator in making something DKU would this be fun?
Yes.
And then kind of working backwards.
Yeah, there is like, that, but there also has to be this institutional honesty about it. So we can't just say we're gonna say this is DKU because ooh, wouldn't that be fun? There has to be an actual ironclad logic to it, which is why we did these big drawn out tribunal episodes the other season. We did three of them, and we put a lot of emotion and weight into making these cases for Saberwolf for the Game Boy Advance, which was a long overdue omission, but I feel like we did come at it with renewed logic, and it's something I said no to for many years until I was finally swayed. We looked at it with Killer Instinct 2013, another instance where, you know, I just didn't feel comfortable making the declaration that the Lord of Games actually appeared in it until it was just, yeah, of course he did. And then Cameo, Elements of Power, which was, I think that was more of me finally having sole editorialship over DK Vine, where in the past it might have been more disputed, but I'm just like, no, the voice of a character definitely counts for inclusion in the DKU. So Banjo was heard in that game. So yeah, it's DKU.
Like, I'd say to be clear, there's no anti-Rare Cow animosity on DK Vine. It's, I think, something that we would collectively jump at the chance to make DKU. It just, we need a good enough excuse, reason.
Yeah.
To come along.
I'm probably the most steadfast in being very judicial when it comes to it. But I'm very happy when something becomes DKU. I was happy when all three of those aforementioned games were added to the canon, if you will, because yeah, it's fun. It's fun when we can say, this is part of the shared universe and here's the proof. But if we don't have that ironclad proof, then everything starts to fall apart. Everything starts to fray at those edges. And this is my life's work, as sad as that is. So I have to be very careful because, yeah, you know, Nintendo and Rare, they have their own management. Playtonic as well. They have their own management of all of their IPs, and you know, somebody's got to keep it all intertwined on the fan perspective of things. And if that's my calling, so be it. You know, other people are called to greatness for things like curing disease or solving hunger or, you know, resettling refugees. And this is what I'm doing with my life, but I'm just making myself sad now, Cameron, so maybe we should move on. Freezer, I hear your point, though, and believe you me, this discussion is not over. I have a feeling this is going to follow me like a shadow for many years, and eventually you will have your platform on the conversation itself, so just hold tight, and thanks for calling. All right, let's go ahead and play our ninth call. We are one third of the way there, Cameron. Congrats.
Yo, Kyle, what's up? It's Bullcraft Max here. Listen, I haven't called on the show in a while, but I, of course, listen to every single episode because I love your show. And just want to say, in addition to what I want to say about this topic that you're going on, just congratulations for becoming full-time YouTuber again, man, full-time content creator. Super happy for your success. Love the show. And yeah, I'm just so happy that the Geek Critique advertised your show many years ago, and the rest is history. So just want to say congrats to that. And my topic for this is, why do you think people like Greg Malis here, why do you think that they were able to do great stuff on like the original Donkey Kong Country games and other Rare games? And then when they were bought by Microsoft, they were want to say relegated, but they were told to do Kinect Sports and Sonic Sega Racing and Fable Journey and Kinect and other Kinect sports games when they could have been making Sea of Thieves all this time and do work on maybe something like Everwild, which we still don't really know about, but it's supposed to be very promising. So just curious what your thoughts on that and why some of these very talented game developers were told to basically do like weird and obscure first party kind of like quote unquote casual style games to compete with the Wii. So again, congratulations on your full time gig here at DK Vine. Super happy for you, man. And keep up the good work. And Mitchell Wolf is also a legend in addition to you, Heil. Take care, guys. Bye.
Thank you for the call, Bullcraft Max. Thank you for the kind words as well. You know, it's not much in the way of success yet. I'm making it work, but it's, you know, it's a struggle. But I am, you know, things are starting to break my way a little bit. So it's nice. And I get to do this day in and day out. So, yeah, I'm not going to complain. But yeah, to your point, you know, I think it wasn't so much that they were like sidelining Greg or, you know, not realizing what they had as far as like the creative spark there. It's just a matter of circumstances and who is also in charge of Xbox Studios for a bit or then Microsoft Studios. And, you know, I don't want to talk down Kinect Sports either. It's obviously not what the fandom was looking for, the quote-unquote Rare fandom, but those at least first two games did very well for Microsoft, for Xbox. So it's not like it was necessarily misguided as much as, you know, we didn't want that from Rare, and we thought that was like a waste of Rare's talents. Rare still put everything they had in those games, and they did quite well until the Kinect kind of just went belly up. But, you know, I think that the biggest issue, and this goes back to when Rare was bought by Microsoft, was one, the built-in audience that Rare cultivated for so many years didn't make that jump with them, except for, you know, edge cases, weirdos like us. But two, the industry changed rapidly during that time as well, and Rare had issues keeping up. And so it's not so much that they didn't realize what they had with Greg, it was just, how can you utilize that for modern game development? And it took a complete restructuring of Rare, and sort of going back to the drawing board at long last after the Stampers left, that made them hit upon Sea of Thieves and how you could bring that Greg Males magic to the modern perspective.
I think this is something I see a lot of the time when people talk about the games Rare put out, like following the buyout up through Sea of Thieves, is that there was a lot less, like, quote-unquote, forcing Rare to do anything than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it really was, I think, just Rare floundering for a bit because they were a fish out of water and the industry was rapidly evolving around them. And they had to figure out for a little bit, like, what direction can we take that, like, we'll see, like, the level of success they used to achieve, but also feel authentic to the studio's identity.
Right.
And, like, I feel like the reason we didn't get Sea of Thieves back then and the reason we got it in the late 2010s is because, like, It's them figuring it out. It's figuring out a way to bring this, like, these like disparate parts of the studio's identity together in something that will work and sustain them for modern times.
Right.
As I so often say with Ghoulies, is like, if Ghoulies hadn't been Rare's first Xbox game, I feel like it would be remembered as a very different game. I feel like bare minimum it would have the reputation that Blast Corps and Jet Force Gemini share of, like, they aren't the household names that Donkey Kong Country and Banjo-Kazooie and Perfect Dark are, but people remember them fondly. They're cult classics. They aren't topics of debate.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, it was just kind of a bad hand all around, because Ghoulies was the game that was deepest in development when they made the jump, when they got purchased
and
by Microsoft.
It's certainly just, of anything they released, I'd say including Star Fox Adventures after the N64, it feels the most like one of their N64 games.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because Ghoulies does feel like almost a culmination of their years with Nintendo, but it was their first Xbox game. And so from the, like, outsider's perspective, outsider being maybe people who really loved Rare games on the N64, but they weren't knee deep in Rare games, like, just like waiting in all the minutia and all of the little nuances of what makes a Greg Males game, for example, they just saw that and they're like, this isn't what we want. A lot of people didn't give it a chance, let's be honest. But yeah, it's a
bit on, like, people not having perspective on, like, how the games industry works, where, like, a lot of people did have the mentality of, like, well, this is Rare's first Xbox game. Why isn't this Banjo-Kazooie or Perfect Dark? Why did you choose to have this be your first game?
Yeah.
And it's, like, it just happened to be the one furthest along in the pipeline because it was going to be a GameCube game.
Yeah, for sure. And so, yeah, I think it was just, honestly, a decade of playing catch-up. The buyout really set things into motion that it was kind of hard to dig themselves out of that hole. And that's not me saying, like, it's was a bad marriage or anything. And obviously they have found success now. But they did have a lot of little successes along the way with Xbox. And it just wasn't until the bottom fell out a little bit after Nuts and Bolts. And it just became Kinect Sports, and there was talk about, you know, shuttering Manor Park and just moving into Birmingham. And it really would have, like, I feel like taking a sledgehammer to what made Rare very unique and very special. And thankfully, as much as the layoffs completely sucked and I don't agree with, it did, like, start the process of, how can we save Rare but keep Rare Rare? And it did give us Playtonic, which I'm internally thankful for. Like, I'm not sure I want to live in the timeline that doesn't have Playtonic as well. So, you know, and that's one of the things they asked me is when I got invited to go to Rare in 2016 and play Sea of Thieves. They sat me down. They wanted, like, everybody's input. And one of the first things they asked me was, does it feel like a Rare game? Because that's one of the things they were very desperate to maintain, even going in this new direction. And so, yeah, it just took a bit of time. And I think the fact that they did listen to Greg, they did listen to his input on how you can do a game for the modern era, but still keep it Rare. And that gave us Sea of Thieves, and look at what that's done for them and where that's at. And it's launching on the PlayStation this month. The closed beta is happening the next weekend. And so, you know, it's just amazing to see that turnaround. And hopefully Greg can make something worthwhile with Everwild too. So yeah, it is a shame it took so long, but I think it's actually pretty remarkable that it happened at all. And, you know, Greg wasn't just laid off and they just completely left, like, let him go through their fingers. And yeah.
Not to get too much into it, but I look at the state of the industry nowadays, and I think Rare could be worse off.
Exactly. Yeah, they didn't get any impact from the recent layoffs at Xbox Studios, and not to say that I'm happy about that. Like, I'm not happy about any of those layoffs. Nobody should be laid off when you have as much money as that. But that being said, Rare's actually in pretty good shape right now. So, yeah. It's a weird vantage point to have as a long-suffering Rare fan. But, yeah, thank you for the call. All right, let's go ahead and play number 10.
Cameron, Kyle, this is Traveler of the Stars here. Kyle, you got so amazing, sounded so amazing every time on the conversation. It just makes all of us, you know, seem inadequate. You look so stop that. No, this is a cool little topic you're doing today, or I guess I'm deciding the topics. We, the callers, are deciding the topic. Well, I guess, if I had to pick a few topics, I know, Kyle, you don't like talking about new consoles and speculating stuff, but I think, you know, whether or not when you believe it's coming, obviously a new Nintendo console is coming someday, right? I would just be interested if you had anything you guys have wanted to see. I know that you've never really, like, in-depth talked about it before. Obviously, you know, a Donkey Kong game, of course. Duh. But, you know, I don't know. I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts on it. I know probably, like, the games carrying forward will probably be a thing for you guys, but I think Nintendo already confirmed that, like, with NSO and with the Nintendo account going forward. I feel like a lot of people overlooked that. So I don't know. I guess I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. I would also normally ask, like a retrospective discussion on, like, the Switch as a whole, but, in Ohio, you know, I love you, but as you've admitted yourself, you're not really the most, comprehensive guy when it comes to gaming taste. So, I'm sure Cameron could rattle off a lot of, like, oh, like, I like this Nintendo series, and this Nintendo series got great titles, but, you know, for you, obviously, there hasn't really been a main game you've been looking for Donkey Kong, you know, what you've been waiting for. At least I don't think they'll be for the Switch. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess you could talk about that. I guess that's all I really got. Harley, you brought up one time, I don't know why, it was kind of random. I thought it was kind of weird. You brought up, like, the top 10 DKU sausages. I don't know. That's kind of random, but if you wanted to, you could do that for me. Maybe top 5, you know, or top 3 maybe. I think you brought the Cloud Cuckoo Land sausage. I don't want to get political, but I think there's a winner you could talk about. I don't know. And there's a clear winner, but I don't want to insinuate anything. I don't know, you randomly brought that topic up one time, so I wanted to bring it up again. Okay, talk to you guys later. You both are great. Goodbye.
Thank you, Traveler of the Stars. Always trying to get me to talk about Luigi with the big sausage. And I don't know. Like, yes, Luigi with the big sausage would win best DKU sausage. It's kind of hard to rank them, though. It really is, because how many are there in just pure sausage form? You're right, Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Yeah, we can't, like, count every pig.
No, even though most of them have some sort of...
It's a little bit morbid.
...pork-based name, you know, either celebrating how they're... could be ham or bacon eventually. It's kind of disgusting. But, yes, to the main crux of your call... The Switch successor, the Super Switch, as I wish it would be called, but probably won't be called. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me because I am not somebody who's very technically minded when it comes to my gaming consoles. All I really want is that backwards compatibility with Switch. I want the Switch library to carry forward in every regard, be it like being able to play my cartridges or being able to play my digital library or Nintendo Switch Online. But, you know, as far as, like, what do I want on it, what I want it to entail, I really can't tell you. I just want there to be a Donkey Kong game early and often, you know, because I am not the most comprehensive guy. You are right there. Don't own Breath of the Wild. What is that? It's some sort of video game, I imagine. But it is weird to think about, like, what games do I want on the Switch successor other than Donkey Kong? Because I honestly can't tell ya. It's also weird because I feel like, and Cameron, you and I were discussing this in one of our Discord servers recently this week. I don't really feel like I'm wanting for much in the way of, say, Smash Brothers, because, you know, what's the next Smash Brothers going to be? I don't care, because I've already had the ultimate Smash Brothers, and you can't really do much in the way of having a new Smash Brothers that would equal that. So I don't really want a new Smash Brothers. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is pretty damn complete. I don't want to go necessarily back to the drawing board and have to wait out Diddy and Funky for another decade there. So what do I want? I don't really know.
Yeah, it's like my biggest, like, Nintendo series wants at this point are the same damn things we always talk about, which are a new Donkey Kong and for Star Fox to not be, like, shuffling off the mortal coil.
Yeah.
I, like, in that Discord discussion, I did express, like, I would at this point like to see, my desire for a new Mario Kart is stronger than my desire for a new Smash, just because I feel like the Mario Kart we got on Switch was not a new game. It was a carryover of one of the best Mario Karts to ever be made. And I think with all of the post-release support Deluxe has gotten since, I think it is definitively hands down the best Mario Kart game, like, without question. But I would like to see, like, more lessons learned and, like, explorations of, like, what more can they add with just a brand new Mario Kart title. But as you said, there is that fear of, are we going to be back to square one?
Yeah.
I really, really hope we're not going to be back at square one.
Yeah. Friend of the show, Kotbox, just had a YouTube video released this past week about what they think, like, the new Mario Kart game, if that is in the works, what that could entail, how it could differentiate itself from Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And one of the points is maybe, you know, get rid of some of the glut of, like, samey characters and maybe utilize something more along the lines of what Mario Kart Tour did, where, like, have costumes and have, like, have more fun with your roster, and, like, maybe not, like, bring in Luigi with Big Sausages as a separate character, but have that be as an, like, alt character, like, skin, like, you can unlock.
Right, like, we've talked a bit, like, you and I have both talked, like, about what we'd like to see in the next, like, numbered Mario Kart before, because it kind of just is going to come up in every Mario Kart themed episode we do, whether it's about Tour or 8 or the Booster Course Pass.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bottom line is just, like, okay, the Mario Kart franchise is on the right track. They're doing things I like in both Tour and in the Booster Course Pass and in just the base game that is Mario Kart 8 and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Now, just bring it together and do more.
Yeah. In a live stream, the SnakeFighter64 says it still needs Dixie, Cranky, and K-Rool to be the best. See, here's my thing. I don't necessarily want too much in the way of Donkey Kong characters in Mario Kart, because a part of me is still holding out hope for some sort of Diddy Kong Racing revival. And I know, like, Mario Kart is Nintendo's bread and butter. It's kind of like the big household name. It's a juggernaut at this point in a way that it necessarily wasn't back in 1997. But I do feel like the underlining concepts of Diddy Kong Racing are different enough, because Mario Kart's never going to completely reinvent the wheel. And I feel like Diddy Kong Racing does enough things differently as a concept, that you could have a separate Donkey Kong-based racing game that does different stuff, having like more adventure aspects, have more fun with the different vehicles that are, you know, are more than just like cosmetics. Maybe like do things like Donkey Kong Racing would have done. I feel like you can have a more niche mascot style kart racing game without sullying the Mario Kart brand. So I feel like there's room in the marketplace for it, especially with Donkey Kong being a hotter property now than it was like the last time they attempted a Donkey Kong racing game, which had its own problems, you know. But and another thing to remember is, you know, I think Diddy Kong Racing is still a valuable IP, and while Rare owns most of the stuff related to it, Nintendo does own the trademark itself. So they could make a game called Diddy Kong Racing, just couldn't have, you know, Timber in it.
Yeah, as much as, like, I do realize, like, Nintendo has incentive to put all their eggs in one basket when it comes to racing games, it's also abundantly clear because they've done that, and Diddy Kong Racing has understandably fallen by the wayside for all the reasons you just discussed, because Mario Kart's gone on so long since Diddy Kong Racing came out, it's become abundantly clear there are some things Diddy Kong Racing does that Mario Kart as a series has no interest in doing and will never have interest in doing.
So, yeah, I think you could, like, have Mario Kart be the big universal crowd pleaser for, like, general audiences, and you could do something a bit more inventive, a bit more niche with a Diddy Kong Racing game that could still sell a lot of units and excite weirdo freaks like us. So, yeah, like, I think, yeah, put Dixie in Mario Kart, because she's already been in Mario Kart Tour, like, that's been done, you know, the cork's been popped there. But, yeah, K. Rool, I kind of draw the line there. It's like, no, let's save some of those characters for a Donkey Kong Racing game, a Diddy Kong Racing, and I will always hold out hope for that. And that's just probably because I came up in a world where that was possible, so.
Hey, DK Vine, it's Steve from Rare Gamer. I know that you've got an open discussion this week for anything to be discussed, so of course, you know, I got to talk about Stop and Swap. So, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I know Heil's already screaming, so we're going to leave that one behind. But I'm wondering here, because we're taking all these kind of older titles on Switch, we're seeing kind of remade, I was wondering which game from the DKU would you guys want to see completely re-envisioned a la Link's Awakening that they've recently done for the Switch in a new style for a new generation? You know, a whole orchestrated score, completely redone visuals, you know, from the ground up, just present it in a high-definition AAA way. So that's my question. Hopefully you guys have some fun with that. You know, good luck. Can't wait to see it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Steve, I was about to order a hit on you. I was about to have someone, some, like, unsavory type show up at your doorstep and shatter your kneecaps. Because I was like, no, I'm not discussing Stop and Swap today. But, you threw me a curveball there. Thank you. Yeah, this is one that I struggle with a little bit, Cameron, because generally speaking, I don't like remakes like this. And I think it's just because I'm used to the way Rare did them, where they would have like a new version of a game and they would change things that would annoy me. And like, one of my go-to examples is the end of Donkey Kong Country 2 for the Game Boy Advance, where they just steamroll the beauty of the ending. And, you know, they add dialogue and characters are just chatting and they're like bickering back and forth for what is the best ending in the DKU. But I look at how Nintendo's been handling some of these recent like remakes, these upscaled versions of classic games, and even like Mario vs. Donkey Kong, the Switch remake, whatever you think about the game in general, I thought that was very elegantly done as a remake, because it preserved a lot of what made that original game, special if you think it's special. If you don't like it, it's, you know, the game is still fundamentally intact. And so maybe I've come around a little bit on it. Like, if it's a very faithful remake that does maybe add some stuff, but not shattering the original intent and the original magic behind the game, maybe I'm okay with it. Maybe I'm rethinking my perspective a little bit. So I'll let you go first. I'll let you give your input.
Well, honestly, it's a pretty difficult question for me too, because I feel like, granted, my perspective is skewed by the fact that I am such a fan of these games, like going back to my childhood, but I feel like generally a lot of these games just hold up the way that they are. They kind of, like, we kind of lucked out that our timeline kind of starts in 1994, where I feel like is a lot of like the cruft of the previous eras was cast off. So, and there's also things where I think about, like, you know, would I want an HD remake of DK King of Swing? Well, the original sprites are really charming. That's part of the appeal for me, so I don't know. I feel like I could say Diddy Kong Racing, just because if the stars aligned to have anything happen with Diddy Kong Racing, like, maybe that would be the opportunity to say, yeah, let's just go for broke. Similar to the Super Mario RPG remake that just recently happened. That was sort of a pie in the sky dream for so long, because you just never could count on Square and Nintendo ever doing that sort of close-knit collaboration again, and it just happened, and it was incredible, super faithful to the original, but also just like a very like modern experience.
Yeah.
And even though we just talked about it, I'm kind of leaning toward Diddy Kong Racing.
I would hate for that to be my choice, but it probably would be. And I say I would hate for that just because we've already had effectively a Diddy Kong Racing remake for the DS. And yeah, that had its problems and there were compromises made. And compromises very much of that era, where it's like, we don't want you to use Banjo and Conker.
See, now that you mention that, I'm kind of even feeling Diddy Kong Racing more strongly now, because doing a full remake of Diddy Kong Racing would present the opportunity to do something that I kind of lament is the case with Nintendo's library in general, which is, because so many of their games have gotten these portable equivalents that have to, like, downscale or feel inclined to remix certain elements to take advantage or make up for shortcomings of the hardware they're on, there's not, like, a definitive edition release that has just everything. Making a full remake of Diddy Kong Racing could be an opportunity to, you know, bring in playable Taj and WizPig, bring in those four Donkey Kong Island tracks.
Yeah. Would you have playable Dixie and Tiny?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
I think it's a weird consequence of Diddy being added to the original game at the 11th hour that you kind of have to, like, ignore. You didn't invite your girlfriend on this one, huh? Interesting.
Well, Timber said not to tell anybody. I mean, he really had no choice. But yeah, like a Diddy Kong Racing Ultimate Edition that maybe even adds some new characters that weren't in either version, like get in Mumbo or Kazooie. I don't know.
And I'm thinking back to like how incredible the Crash Team Racing remake was and how much it basically added like an entire separate game's worth of content in and more over the course of its life.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I guess that would be my choice then, too. Diddy Kong. It's so lazy and unoriginal. It's like, oh, we want Diddy Kong Racing. But yeah.
Also, our remakes.
Yeah. Like, the only other thing I could think of would be Donkey Kong Land, like, one, but I just don't see how you could do that in a way that feels authentic to the Donkey Kong Land experience, that wouldn't just feel like a modern reimagining of Donkey Kong as it exists today versus Paul Makachek doing this, like, lower fidelity version of Donkey Kong Country back in 95. Yeah, I think Diddy Kong Racing would honestly be easier, weirdly enough, to get the tone right. So, yeah, sorry, Steve. Our answer's boring. It's always going to be Diddy Kong Racing.
And that's another thing. If the question were like, and I don't mean to imply like doing a remake is lazy. Remakes take a ton of work. Yeah. But if the question was doing something like a full reinvention, like how like the current Final Fantasy VII remake series is doing, my answer would be markedly different, because then I would pick something you could like basically shore up, like you know, do Star Fox Adventures but have all the stuff they had to cut out of it. Or like Donkey Kong Land, but what if it was a like a modern 2D platformer and not something that had to be squeezed onto a Game Boy cart?
Yeah.
But at that point, it's getting away from the premise of the original question.
Right, right. Yeah, and honestly, like, part of the charm for some of these games are how old and broken they are. And I realize that's a very, like, minority opinion. Like, oh, yeah, nobody loves Donkey Kong Land because you can fall off the screen and die. But, yeah, that's part of the charm for me, weirdly enough. Like, warts and all. So I kind of flinch. I grimace a little bit thinking, like, oh, what if we make Donkey Kong Land but better? And I'm like, no, I like it because it's so janky. All right. So, yeah, thank you for the call, Steve. Thank you for not making me talk about Stop and Swap again. The hit has been called off. Let's play our 12th call. We're halfway there. Oh, my God.
Hi, this is Tyler. I think who you're doing a call-in whatever you want thing. Because something's been wriggling my mind lately. Whenever you guys talk about cameo games, it's like, there are some exceptions, often disparaging, and you're unhappy with the way Donkey Kong's represented or the amount of representation. I can sort of see that. I'm curious if you have games Side Smash Ultimate that you point to as a standard as what you want for a cameo game in terms of how Donkey Kong is represented. Like, what would you say is the best in each sub-series? Somewhat similarly, I'm thinking about how so many people want, instead of Mario Kart Time 9, they want Super Smash Kart. Personally, I'm against that idea because, well, two reasons. One, there's so many aspects of the Mario universe that woefully unrepresented, like the RPG, Mario 2, as Hylas pointed out. Also, I just feel like things won't fit as well tonally in a Mario Kart-like game than they do as a fighting game. Which has me wondering, what approach would you prefer? Would you want a Mario Kart 9 for the Switch 2, or would you rather them just fully embrace the crossover element? And to make things a bit more interesting, assume in each hypothetical scenario the amount of DK, ratio of DKU representation would be equal. So it wouldn't be like one path would have more of what of the DKU than the other. Thanks for listening in. Goodbye.
Oh, thank you for the call, Kyle. It kind of broke up there, so I'm trying to piece together what you're asking. Apologies if we don't get it one-to-one. Sometimes it's just the downside to taking these calls is the intent isn't made clear because of just the realities of phones and what have you. But you were asking, I did piece together that you're asking about like the standard for Donkey Kong representation in cameo games. Like, what is the best, the ideal standard, I guess you could say. And I mean, like, I guess it's a case-to-case basis, but generally speaking, what I really like is when Donkey Kong, it feels like you're doing more than just sticking the character in a Mario game. My favorite cameo games generally are when you've got a couple Kongs, like Donkey and Diddy at the very least, and you've got aspects of the Donkey Kong series making their way into it as well. And that can be a very faithful home course or track or sporting arena with like familiar elements in there. It can be things like moves or accoutrements, weapons from the Donkey Kong series making their way over. So I think to things like Camelot's representation of the Kongs in a lot of their games, starting with Toadstool Tour, that's really when I felt like, oh wow, like they're going there. I remember how cool it was when we would get DK barrels showing up in cameo games, because it just felt like so atypical. Because in the N64 era, it was just, oh, here's Donkey Kong in this game. We might give you a jungle that's kind of generic and not really pulling from anything in the Donkey Kong series. But then you started getting things like DK barrels, and then you got in Mario Power Tennis, critters standing on the sidelines, clap traps. Diddy had the rocket barrel, the jetpack. And that's kind of like, okay, yeah, I've got something I can stick my teeth into now as a Donkey Kong fan.
I feel like what it comes down with for me is, Donkey Kong's in a cameo game. One, does Donkey Kong and any series element you're using from the Donkey Kong series feel like true to Donkey Kong? Does it feel like you've got the look of the character down? Do you have the personality of the character down? Does, like, he seem represented as well as, like, any other character, any other given character in the game? And also, and I mean that outside of Smash Brothers context.
Yes.
And also, okay, you have Donkey Kong in a game that is not wholly a Donkey Kong game, like, in itself. Are you using the fact that you've brought in this secondary IP to its full potential, or like at least exploring that potential beyond just having DK in there and like paying lip service? And I think like the Power Tennis example was a good example, because yeah, it's a game with tennis doubles, so you have DK and Diddy, and you have a dedicated Donkey Kong court with Donkey Kong specific enemies, Donkey Kong specific music. And a game that I think about, like the game that really came to mind first off with this question, is you think it would be Smash Ultimate because of just the sheer breadth of everything that is in it. I thought back to Super Smash Bros. Brawl with just the pleasant surprise of, hey, there's DK and there's Diddy, and they're doing stuff in the game that feels incredibly true to these characters, to the point that it's more true to these characters than maybe most or any Donkey Kong games.
Right. Yeah, the whole like subspace emissary arc with those characters was one of the most true essences of the Donkey Kong characters, bar none. Like, not even just in the buyout era, but I look to that as like, yeah, they nailed it. And I think that's where I get hung up with cameo games, because I don't hate Donkey Kong appearing in Mario games, like Mario side games. I would hate it if he was in Wonder. Like, that would have been a bridge too far for me. But I don't want Donkey
Kong. It's like, well, if I'm not getting Donkey Kong games, I like the excuse for Donkey Kong stuff to mooch off of somebody else's popularity.
Right. I don't want Donkey Kong just to be a warm body in one of these games, just filling out the roster, but you're not doing anything with the IP. And I think that's my biggest thing, is like, what cameo games knock it out of the park, even if it's not a baseball game? It's the ones that treat Donkey Kong as, like, this wealth of stuff you can do with it. Don't just bring in Donkey Kong to bring in Donkey Kong because you can bring in Donkey Kong. Bring in Donkey Kong and give something for Donkey Kong fans. And that's where a lot of, like, Mario Party games, I think, have failed, especially when they just relegated Donkey Kong to NPC status, and that was it. Like, maybe you have Donkey Kong mini games, but again, it's just like, what am I getting out of this as a Donkey Kong fan? Not much. But you look at some of Camelot's biggest successes. You look at Smash is kind of cheating, though, you know, because Smash is designed to be this big crossover between every video game franchise that's worthy of crossing over. So I feel like, yes, smash this, smash that. But again, it's almost unethical bringing it up in this kind of debate. But yeah, like, going forward, I just want there to be that, if you're going to do it. And if we're not getting much in the way of Donkey Kong games, be they core games in the series or side games, then just make sure you're doing right by Donkey Kong and you're not just treating him as an accessory of the Mario cast. So you brought up Mario Kart 9, and or I guess it'd be Mario Kart 10 if they consider Mario Kart Tour to be Mario Kart 9.
Yeah, I am really fascinated to find out what they call the next one.
They might just... I think Mario Kart X would probably be the catchiest name, but... because that could mean 10, or that could just mean it's X. Who knows what X means? But I think that, like, I don't want there to be, like, equitable parity between the Kong side and the Mario side, because it's a Mario game. If there should be equitable, like, half and half in anything, it's the Mario versus Donkey Kong series. And my biggest issue with that is there's not. It's all just Mario stuff with some Donkey Kong arcade stuff thrown in, and then Donkey Kong's the villain. It's just not what I would expect. So, like, I'm not looking for, like, a 50-50 split, but yeah, it would be nice just to have Diddy and Funky there from the start, for one, and to have maybe a new Donkey Kong track that's not just recycled from Mario Kart 7. That's been the biggest problem, is, like, Mario Kart 7 had the most faithful Donkey Kong track because Retro Studios co-developed the game, and then that just got carried over to Mario Kart 8, which was just the Mario Kart game for then the Switch, and so we haven't had much in the way of new Donkey Kong tracks for over a decade, which is why Moby...
Unfortunately, we also haven't had much in the way of new Donkey Kong games for them to base a new track on.
That is true as well, which is why Moby DK was such an exciting prospect for us for that brief window in time. But we're just circling back now in discussions we had with past callers. So
all roads eventually lead to Mario Kart.
Yeah, or Diddy Kong Racing. That's just the way they are. So, Kyle, I hope we answered enough of what you asked. I'm sorry that a lot of your call dropped out there, but yeah, thank you for calling nonetheless. So, Cameron, we got another two-part caller here, calls 13 and 14.
Hello, friends. Ah, crap. Hello, friends of DK Vine. This is Garthew again. I think I haven't called in, like, months, but I want to call again because I saw a new episode coming out. That's cool. And last time, I've been really excited. I've been wanting to talk about Grunty's Revenge for a long while now, but I missed the calling period for the last episode, so I figured now is as good a time as any to make up for that. Now, I actually haven't finished that last episode yet, because I was waiting on it. I was waiting to listen to it until after I replayed the game, and then it took me months to replay the game, so here we are now. So if I cover anything that y'all already talked about, oops. But, Anyways, I just wanted to talk about it because that is a major childhood game for me, and I always found it interesting because, you know, I had it on the Game Boy Advance growing up, and even, like, at that age, didn't know what an SNES was, and we had the N64, but it was in my sister's room, so I rarely got to play it. So really, my main exposure to both Donkey Kong and Banjo was on the Game Boy Advance, and that was really what I knew them for. We had Donkey Kong 64. I remember playing that, but outside of that, they're mainly Game Boy Advance games to me. And I always find that interesting, of like how depending on when you grew up, certain franchises you may associate with being from a certain time period. And I still remember in middle school when I started watching YouTube for the first time, kind of blew my mind learning about like their history before that. And got to play the games, love them, blah, blah, blah. But I thought it would be fun to talk about some funny little memories I have of the game playing when I was a kid. Like, for one, probably not the most original thought, but I remember Mecha Grunty was terrifying. Because I was playing it when I was, like, what, 4 years old or whatever? And my reading skills were very low at that point, so I didn't really understand the plot, but just her voice and like her like little talking icon in the bottom always scared me in the whole design, and it took a while before I finally like broke through that fear to play through the rest of the game. And speaking of little talking icons, I love the voices from Grunty's Revenge, because like they're so different from the other games, and I get why. It's because, you know, limitations of the Game Boy Advance and what they could be able to, you know, crunch onto the smaller cartridge size. But I love the voices. They sound so silly. Like, the original sounds silly enough, but I just love... Hey, guys, Garth here again. Did not realize that I was getting that long-winded, so I'll try to cut down on everything else I had to say real quick. But, yeah, to finish what I was saying about the voices, I really love the voices. Like, Banjo always just sounds so tired compared to an N64 game, just like, like, I always loved his voice there, and as much as I played the N64 games later and came to appreciate them as the original voice, there's just something I love about his voice in Grunty's Revenge. Same for Mumbo Jumbo and Bazai. I understand to the average person who's not really into these games, some people might find them annoying. I don't care. They are objectively wrong. They're really funny to me. other few things is, I remember as a kid, I don't know why, but it just doesn't really matter, but I used to think Mumbo Jumbo was a girl. And I think it was just because I was really stupid and I was like, well, like, he's kind of like pink, right? So like, that means Mumbo's a girl. And it wasn't like till years later, when I gained reading comprehension, that I realized that that was not the case and felt very silly in retrospect. But, that's a fun little thing. Mumbo Jumbo also used to scare the crap out of me as a kid, but to a lesser extent, because at least Mumbo Jumbo's not trying to kill you. So he has that bonus leg up on Grunty. But, just overall, I feel like Grunty's Revenge is a game that deserves a lot more recognition than people get it. I'm sure, I already know y'all agree, but I really wish people would give it more time of day, because I feel like there are so many Banjo fans who just play the first game, and that's all they care about, and then Nuts and Bolts happened, and Nuts and Bolts bad, and that's like all they know about the franchise, when I feel like Grunty's Revenge and Tooie, which is my favorite game of all time, I feel like they add so much to the series that people just ignore. But yeah, that was all I really had to say about Grunty's Revenge. Outside of that, just wanted to mention, I know you've mentioned doing a Viva Pinata episode. I will, unless it already came out and I haven't seen it, maybe I'm just stupid. But if that comes out, believe me, I am incredibly excited. That is another major childhood game. Was obsessed with that as a kid. Sometimes I just listen to the pause music on repeat. Like, who cares about the Xbox Family Timer? I gotta listen to this. So, but I'll hold off my thoughts on that game until, if that episode ever comes around, I love Viva Pinata. So anyway, hope y'all are having a wonderful day. That is all. So thanks.
Well, thank you for the calls. I'm always happy to hear somebody spread their love for Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge. And yeah, you're not going to find any disagreements with us about loving the Banjo-Kazooie games that aren't just the first Banjo-Kazooie game. Don't get me wrong, I love the first Banjo-Kazooie game, but it is, I don't want to say a problem. It's something Dustin's always ranting about, that so much of, or at least it feels this way, so much of the vocal Banjo-Kazooie fan base nowadays just talks about the first game, and they don't give any shrift to Tooie or Grunty's Revenge, you know, or Nuts and Bolts. You know, you cannot like what it did with it, but you can still respect it on an individual basis. And it's just, yeah, people don't celebrate these other Banjo games enough.
It's interesting to hear the perspective of somebody for whom Grunty's Revenge was like the primary Banjo-Kazooie experience. I feel like that I do not hear that very often.
You don't, but I feel like they're obviously out there. And, you know, I remember when we went to MAGFest and we did our panel there, and somebody talked about how, like, Jungle Climber was their primary Donkey Kong game, like their introduction to it. And it's just like, yeah, every game has a potential to be somebody's intro to that series. And the Game Boy Advance was a powerhouse when it came to DKU representation. And it was, I think, the backbone of the DKU during the buyout era, because you could play the Donkey Kong Country games on there. You could play new Donkey Kong games on there. You could play Banjo-Kazooie games on there. Mr. Pants, well, nobody played that at the time, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, while much, like, while the, like, Grunty's Revenge as first a Banjo experience is a pretty uncommon story for me to hear, I do regularly encounter people who, like, first latched onto DKC because of those GBA ports.
I mean, it's a story we've told time and again here on the podcast, where thanks to the success of Donkey Kong Country Game Boy Advance, it laid the groundwork for Retro to do Donkey Kong Country Returns. So we owe everything to the Game Boy Advance and that handheld team at Rare, and, you know, everything that came on that system. I think the Game Boy Advance is probably my favorite system of all time. Like, when I ignore the blinders of the nostalgia of, you know, growing up with the NES and SNES and N64, I think, gun to my head, the Game Boy Advance has the most killer lineup of games that appeal to me. It's just a lovely little system.
Yeah, I think it has a fantastic library. It's like what I discussed with, like, us being past 1994 with Donkey Kong Country. I feel like it's a handheld that gets to shake off a lot of the constraints of, you know, an 8-bit portable system by moving that next step up. And I was actually had occasion to discuss this recently, seeing one of my roommates with their Game Boy Advance SP. I think, like, aside from the glaring flaw that is the lack of a headphone jack, that is, like, my favorite piece of Nintendo hardware.
Yeah.
Just on its face. I think it's a nice little, like, clamshell device that looks sleek and addressed the main problem everybody had with the Game Boy family of systems.
Yeah, I've still got the SP.
Especially on my... the base Game Boy Advance?
Yeah, I've got the SP on my nightstand. Like, I still have it ready to go. Like, I keep the charger next to my phone charger because I'm always just ready to play the SP to this day. So, yeah, I agree. And it's one of the reasons I really hope that we can get the lineup on NSO. Because, yeah, we've got the Donkey Kong Country trilogy on the Super Nintendo NSO, but the GBA remakes mean so much to so many people. They were a lot of people's introduction to Donkey Kong Country. And I would love to see them. I would love to see the Rare THQ releases, Granny's Revenge, It's Mr. Pants, Saber Wolf, and Banjo Pilot. But, you know, I also realize that that might be a bigger ask.
Yeah, it's a shame that those titles in particular, I feel like, are in danger of being lost to history because of the platform they were released on. And it's not even a platform that's difficult to emulate, relatively speaking, or has some like weird hardware gimmick that makes it extremely difficult to carry over.
Yeah, it's a shame they weren't in Rare Replay. It's a shame they're not on NSO currently. It's a shame they haven't been commercially available for 20 years now, just because they are so foundational to my fandom. They really helped bolster my fandom at a time when it could have been in danger of waning. And as we just heard, some people's introduction to Banjo-Kazooie and Rare. So that's pretty damn cool. Thank you so much for your perspective. Andre in the chat, just Andre says, we found the Zoomer equivalent of the Rockrocks in reference to being scared of Mecha Grunty and Mumbo. You know, Mumbo is scary in the original Banjo-Kazooie. Like, Mumbo is a creepy little freak.
And like, did you really have a favorite childhood Rare game if there wasn't at least one thing in it that gave you nightmares?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I want Mumbo to be creepier. I like him being just this, just lurking in the shadow. Oh, you're going into this crypt in outside of Mad Monster Mansion? What the hell is Mumbo doing there? Ah! Love it. Anyway, thank you so much for the calls and the perspective. Let's play our 15th call, Cameron.
Hello, DK Vine. This is my first time calling, and my name will be Situated Knight from here on out if I call again. I'm really nervous, but that's okay. So before I ask my silly question, I just want to thank you not only for all the work you do, but also just the welcoming atmosphere and positivity you bring. And I would say it's a small community, but it does make the world a brighter place, so thank you. And now my question is, what do you think are the significant differences between the dynamic between DK and Diddy and that of Mario and Luigi? Besides, of course, for the fact that one is a nephew of the other and one is a brother of the other. In case you didn't know. But, yeah, sometimes I just see two different people and, like, you'll think, oh, there's Mario and that's Luigi. And I guess you could say a similar thing for DK and Diddy. I mean, DK's the older one and Diddy is kind of like his disciple, whereas you might take Diddy and Dixie and they're more of equals, I'd say, in their adventuring. But, yeah, just any answer you have, I'd be curious to hear. So, yeah, I'll be listening. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Was it Situated Knight? I'm terrible with names, Cameron.
Asking the wrong person.
Okay,
I'm really bad at, like, parsing things through crunchy phone calls.
Yeah, I know, it's one of my biggest foibles as a human being in person, in like, person-to-person interactions, let alone over the phone. So, I apologize if I got that wrong, but thank you so much for your kind words. It means a lot to hear, and I've got an answer for you. I've got an answer to your question, because I have thought a lot about this. I'm sure it comes to no surprise, but the way I view Diddy and Donkey is that, unlike Mario and Luigi, there is an equality to their partnership. While Donkey did start off as the mentor to Diddy, and Diddy was very much the protege, the sidekick, Diddy made good when he rescued Donkey Kong and got all those hero coins for Cranky Kong. He graduated to full video game hero status. And from that point on, Donkey Kong viewed him as an equal. Cameron and I just talked about the Subspace Emissary, the Super Smash Brothers Brawl depiction of Donkey and Diddy, and I feel like that was the best illustration of their relationship post-DKC2, where they're not just like, oh, I'm the important one and you're the tag-along little sidekick. It's, no, we're equals, we're adventuring partners, and we're kicking ass together, and we're, you know, if something befalls one, the other one will be on the case. We'll be on the hunt, on the rescue party, leading the charge. And yeah, I think that does get lost, unfortunately, a little bit in modern Donkey Kong games, where by design, you've got Donkey Kong as the base Kong and everybody's riding on his back. And so it kind of does relegate Diddy to this more also-ran status, this almost like assistant or power-up, as he's derisively called by some. But I think spiritually speaking, like on a pure character basis, they are equal partners, and there is a respect there that was earned when Diddy rescued DK. And you even see that a little bit like in your off-screen shenanigans when in Donkey Kong Country 3, they just head off together and don't even invite Dixie. There's just this like almost hive mind there after they've kind of reached that equal status. And Dixie claws her way there with DKC3. And I think she's there as well. But yeah, I think like with Mario, Mario's also going, like he's always going to be in the spotlight in a way that Luigi isn't. And Luigi has that kind of downtrodden, I am Mario's forgotten brother kind of vibe going on. And I don't get that with Diddy. Diddy is a cocksure little punk. And Donkey respects that, you know? So, yeah, that's the way I see them.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree that's like the marked difference between DK and Diddy and Mario and Luigi. I feel like it really is just that Mario and Luigi is a brotherly relationship, and DK and Diddy is this teacher-pupil relationship that sort of evolved into something more over time as the mutual respect grew between the two.
Yeah.
Like, you even see it in the first game where, like, Donkey Kong is effectively just giving Diddy busy work because he wants to go to sleep.
Right, right.
what he thinks is going to be, like, just him sitting out in the dark all night with nothing happening. To, like, them, like, play fighting with each other in the ending to, like, really, again, going back to Brawl, that just feels like that is the culmination of the journey these two characters have been on, really.
Yeah, it's...
In terms of their dynamic with each other.
It's kind of like Donkey Kong was humoring Diddy at first, and the journey they went on together had blossomed into them becoming legitimately best friends. And that's... Yeah, that's why, like, it's just one of my favorite little arcs in all of video games, and why Diddy is like my favorite character, because I feel like I grew up alongside this character who actually matured into being his ideal self, that like who he wanted to be, right? And it's just a wonderful little thing that Rare carried through like during their time on the series. And yeah, I don't have anything else to add. All right, our next one is a two-part call. It's our last two-part call of the batch. So we'll play these back-to-back.
Heyo, Captain Ratley here. No negative vibes this time. I'm just going to say something like a fun little what-if situation in case you're willing to listen or whatever, and like since you're doing like a whole call game or whatever. So, you know how, like, that render of that with release of Dixie that has her dancing and whatever, or party mode, how the Lego set had her have an entirely original scenario of her doing, like, a music, like, stage or whatever? And also, like, how EPD's last Donkey Kong game, like, not Rareware, not Retro Studios, EPD's last DK game was Jungle Beat? Well, I have a a bit of a hypothesis for you. Like, what if the next Donkey Kong EPD game is not your traditional platformer, but a Jungle Beat sequel, like a brand new game playable in the style of Jungle Beat that's more of like a rhythm-based game based on moving around, based on the music and whatnot. I don't know, it just feels like it's like the type of thing they could probably do. Like, Donkey Kong has a huge, like, love for the music. Like, you said, like, in, like, that rumor that, like, a lot of DK fans are making the new EPD game, like, people who grew up with Rare's games. And, well, what's more famous than, you know, the actual music from Donkey Kong? Not the stupid bullshit, like the jingle bells or whatever the fuck they did in Donkey Konga, but, like, actual Donkey Kong music. Like, Sugar Bush Symphony, the Forest Interlude, you know, those songs. Like, I feel like that, like, if we are to get another, like, Jungle Beat, like, type deal, like, the next Donkey Kong platformer is more focused on the music, would you guys think that would be a cool concept for the next game? Or would you be kind of upset and prefer that we get something more on the lines of, like, Tropical Freeze or DK64 with no music rhythm attachments or whatnot? I just thought I'd bring that up. And also the fact that, like, I think I saw a while back that, like, the Donkey Kong bongos were repatented or whatever for recently. I don't know how recently and how long ago, but I do think I remember seeing, like, Donkey Bongos being patented and whatnot. I don't know if that's a sign for anything. It may not mean anything, and I doubt that would be the main way to play the Donkey Kong game, like how it may be the way it's advertised to play the new Donkey Kong game, like how the arms can be forced with the Joy-Cons, but it's actually to be playable with the Pro Controller. Hey, sorry, I think I got cut off halfway through my speech or whatever. But anyway, like, assuming you didn't get all that, like, what I was saying is that, like, how, you know, how, like, the Dixie render of her dancing and the whole music thing and whatnot, and the whole music stage she got for her Lego sets, I was wondering if, like, that and maybe, like, a Donkey Kong, like, bongo patented that went around a while back is maybe a hint that we could possibly, maybe, get, like, a Jungle Beat sequel for the EPD game, like, another rhythm-based Donkey Kong game. Not like Donkey Konga or whatever, like, it's, like, entirely just fucking Beat Saber shit or whatever, but, like, a full-on Donkey Kong platformer that's themed around the music, because, like, if the whole EPD team developing the new Donkey Kong game are fans of Donkey Kong, the Rareware era at least, then what's more famous than, like, the actual music of Donkey Kong? The real music of Donkey Kong. So, like, do you think we could possibly, with the hint of the whole Dixie dancing render of, like, Universal and the Lego set and the patent that went around that I saw, like, the Donkey Kong bongo patents, I don't know if they went around or not, do you think that maybe the next Donkey Kong EPD game could be a Jungle Beat type sequel with the actual Rareware characters in it? Or do you think it would be something else, more traditional, not really music-based and whatnot? I don't know, it's just food for thought. Like, what would you prefer, and what do you think about the possibility of a Jungle Beat type game for the EPD game? Anyways, I'll catch you on the call. See ya.
Thank you for the calls, Captain Radley. So, it's hard to say, but I really don't feel like the next Donkey Kong game is going to be that experimental as far as you have to have a peripheral to play it, or that's the preferred way to play it. I think they might have learned their lesson a little bit with Jungle Beat. Jungle Beat's a fine game, and I like it quite a bit, but it was hindered by the fact that it was married to the bongo. So I don't think they would repeat that in their big swing, you know, to kind of bring Donkey Kong back to the forefront. I think it's going to be a little bit more conservative in some respects.
I also, I, I've never actually looked into the development on this, but I have to imagine this is the case. Jungle Beat's existence feels very much like a, well, the DK bongos exist. How do we make a game that justifies their existence a bit more than just having Donkey Konga rather than the other way around?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's a lot less likely to get a platformer that from the ground up requires like a separate peripheral, especially when, not always, but in a lot of cases, Nintendo's base hardware in and of itself is the fun party peripheral.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just the paradigm's a lot different nowadays. That said, while I don't expect the new Donkey Kong game will be like rhythm-based or a Jungle Beat sequel of any kind, that would be kind of interesting to see. I'd be open to it.
Yeah, I think, again, and I'm going to say this knowing I'm repeating myself, I would be completely fine and embrace a like Jungle Beat sequel, but I also think we need more in the way of a like a stable, concrete, more accessible Donkey Kong game for everyone as kind of like the baseline, and then you can have other things alongside it. And I know Jungle Beat was the main Donkey Kong game for the GameCube, but because of the association with the bongos, and because Donkey Konga came first, there was a lot of market confusion there. And
yeah.
It just, I don't think they would repeat that.
I certainly don't expect it would be like the first DK game to show up after
right.
So many years of absolute radio silence, because it is, I think it is a tough sell when it's the only game in town for yeah. Donkey Kong.
And yes, Nintendo did repatent the DK bongos, or what appeared to be the DK bongos, but that stuff's always been done, and it doesn't necessarily bear any fruit. There could have been any number of reasons why they did that. Maybe they were thinking just future-proofing, just in case they wanted to bring them back, or they're just, I don't know. But I
or
really
they just reference them in a future game. Like it could be something in a new Pikmin game that you find on the ground.
Yeah. I don't know if there is any true reasoning behind that, or they were just doing it to shore things up. The other year they re-upped the trademark to Dixie Kong's Double Trouble. Which is really weird because they don't have a trademark on Diddy's Conquest. And it's just like, what are you doing? What is that?
But, that is weird.
Yeah, it really was, yeah. So, that being said, like, I think that music is a big part of the Donkey Kong series, as you said. And I think you'll see that celebrated, you know, even in just regular games that have no rhythm-based gameplay. And I think Dixie, she's identified because she plays the guitar. That's like a core part of her character now. You saw that in Tropical Freeze, you know, and you saw that in the Lego set, which directly brought back her guitar from Donkey Country 2. So the fact that she might be dancing, I think she's a musical girl. She's a rock and roll adventurer. So that might be part of her character, but I don't necessarily think it would dictate the entire game.
I think in the case of Lego set, it's also just a really an aspect of the character that intrinsically lends itself really well to a toy.
Yeah, especially when the whole toy has to interact with these baseline Super Mario Legos. So the whole gimmick is you got to put it on one of these like chip Legos and it'll interact. And so yeah, how can we utilize Dixie Kong? Well, she plays the guitar, so have her have a jungle jam. Sure. Yeah, it worked. I like that. I think that was my favorite of the four, just seeing that in action and seeing what they could do with it.
It felt like a new and characterful thing for them to do with Dixie.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so Captain Radley did call back, but it's a separate topic now. So let's go ahead and play the next call.
Hey, one more call that's completely unrelated to the last one. Like the whole, like, Mario, the whole DK music thing. So, like, the TK Park might be coming out in May, late May at that. Like, apparently that's the rumor going around. And, like, there's also some other rumors that, like, say that the, that we're getting it in a regular Nintendo Direct in April. Probably not, like, super reliable, but, like, I don't know. That's the thing going around. Like, people are desperate after that whole partner showcase. So, because the opportunity of the DK Park being the month after a possible Nintendo Direct, and, like, the same month as, like, a Nintendo Investors meeting, do you think that possibly, maybe, by a long shot, that, like, the next Donkey Kong game could be revealed in the next Nintendo Direct, if it is in April, before the release of the park, probably next month? Because of the whole, like, Miyamoto has, like, advertised stuff that is not in really game-related, and then announcing something immediately after, like, how, like, they brought up the whole Nintendo Museum in the, thing, and then they brought up the, Pikmin Bloom before revealing Pikmin 4. I don't know. I just think it'd be a really cool idea. Like, it's probably never going to happen, and, like, we shouldn't get our hopes up at all. And it's just, it, let's be real, it's not going to happen at all. But it'd be cool, right? Like, but what do you think? Do you think we'll get the Donkey Kong game revealed in a possible April Direct before the new theme park comes out? Or are you fine with them just doing it later and, like, it's not a big deal if it's not in time for the theme park? I don't know. What do you think?
Boy, I really don't like wading in these waters, because I'm just going to step in it one way or another. I'm going to raise people's hope, and I'm going to be wrong.
I feel like, do you think it's going to happen, and will you be all right if it doesn't, are two different questions.
Yeah, at this point, look, I am completely in the dark now, as far as anyone else is, about whether or not the new Donkey Kong game is ramping up, getting ready to be shown off. I have no idea, because all of my knowledge for it ended when it crossed the Pacific, right? So I've shared everything I know, and everything I knew is now several years old, and it could have changed, and I'm just not aware of it. So to say, like, do I think it's going to be announced in April this month, or in time for the theme park, if it does launch in Japan in late May, I would just be speculating blindly, and I would have no real insight there. So I can't say for sure. Now, do I think it would be the right time to do it? Or at least say, hey, we are working on a Donkey Kong game. Everybody calm down. Check out this kick-ass theme park. Do I think that would be the right move? Yeah, I do, because it is a bit weird, you know, that we're having this theme park get unveiled, and yet the series has basically been dormant for a decade.
I feel like that is a realistic way I could see it happening, because, like, as I've often said in the past, trying to predict when games are going to be announced or released based on, like, milestones or, like, brand alignment is a losing game, just because game development is so volatile nowadays that outside of extreme edge cases like Rare Replay, I feel like it happens far less often than people credit it as happening.
Yeah.
Now that you raise the possibility, I do think it would be maybe behoove them to do an announcement similar to what they did with the announcement that they're making another Mario movie, and just saying, like, hey, we're working on it. There's literally nothing to show you, but, like, it's this is just letting you know it'll be coming eventually.
Right. Yeah. Because, like, for all I know, right, like, it could have been, like, Nintendo is going to make the new Donkey Kong game. Right? Doesn't mean they started it ASAP. You know, it might have been like, we don't have any resources to work on it now, so we're going to work on it when we can get to it, after we clear our docket. And then the pandemic happened. And so it, you know, I don't know if it's far enough along the show. I would hope so, but I really don't know. I am as in the dark as everyone else is now, but it will hurt me a little bit if we don't get a Nintendo Direct or something of Miyamoto wandering around Donkey Kong Country. I want that. I definitely want to have some real estate devoted to really publicizing the fact that there is a Donkey Kong Country theme park now adjacent to the rest of Super Nintendo Land or Super Nintendo World. And, you know, I want to give Donkey Kong his due as he so deserves. And it would be nice if the new game isn't ready or isn't even ready to be announced, if we could get something like, I don't know, a Switch port of Donkey Kong Country Returns, considering the park is basically based on it. And, you know, you can't play that game now. It's a bit weird. Be nice. I'm not saying it's definitely happening, but I would definitely like to see it. I don't know.
I mean, my standard operating procedure with Nintendo Directs in general is, like, don't go in expecting something so you'll be pleasantly surprised if it does
show up. Yeah, it just makes every Nintendo Direct where we don't get something have greater weight in our subconscious whenever we tune in, because it's like, okay, well, we're not going to get anything. And then we actually don't get anything. And then it's like next time, well, we're not going to get anything. But then in the back of your head, you're like, but we didn't get anything last time, so maybe this time. And then it just builds like a snowball going downhill. It's terrible, Cameron. I hate it. I hate Nintendo Directs. Just announce them in Nintendo Power like you used to. All right. Thank you for the calls, Captain Radley. Let's play call number 19. Hey, 19. That's a reference for Jeff, Steely Dan. Just ask your grandparents.
Hello, Highland Cameron. This is KB. I've been listening for a couple of years now, but this is my first time calling in. Love the show. I was just wondering, is there a genre or game design idea you'd love to see tackled in a VKU game that hasn't been tackled yet? For me, I think it would be like a traditional turn-based RPG would be something I'd like to see. I feel like that would give a lot of opportunities to interact with characters and things like that, and things that would really suit the DKU. Let me know what you think. Bye.
Well, thank you for the call. I think it's a great question. You know, an RPG, a DKU RPG, it's been a dream for several years now. And, you know, there was a time when Nintendo and Rare were partnered, that it seemed like a real possibility. Like, yeah, eventually Rare is going to get around to an RPG. Why not? But it's a dream that's kind of faded and waned as the years have gone by. But I still vouch for it personally. Another one I would want is some sort of like simulation-based game, like a SimCity or something that really allows you, the player, to have a lot of creativity and agency in what you do and just get invested in. I really enjoy those types of games. Those are the ones I gravitate to as far as non-DKU games go. So that would kind of excite me the most. Like, the closest we've come probably is Viva Pinata, maybe. And, you know, there are limits to what you can do with your garden, so yeah, just give me, like, the power of God, or Log in this case, and I think I would be pretty giddy, or diddy.
Yeah, I think what most excites me about the prospect of a Donkey Kong RPG is, it's a genre that pretty much forces your hand to use a vast staple of characters.
Right.
That one I'd definitely like to see, and I think it's something that's always kind of been on my mind, and I'm sure a lot of people's mind ever since the Mario RPGs really became a franchise. I guess similarly along those lines, I'd like accept anything that lent itself to more character exploration. One of the like huge like going outside the DK series, one of the huge pleasant surprises last year was Sega's April Fool's game, The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog, which was a Sonic the Hedgehog like murder mystery visual novel. And what was so charming about that is it got to use this huge stable of characters that don't always get time to shine in Sonic's actual games because they often don't have like gameplay or story reason to show up and just yammer at you for a long time.
That's all I really want, is just the opportunity for characters to yammer at me. I think like that's...
It genuinely might be my favorite part of RPGs in general, is just going to like a very lived-in environment and listening to people talk to me.
Yeah, I think as much as I love Retro's Donkey Kong Country games, that is one area where they chafe against my own wants a little bit, where they're so utilitarian in how they use characters that I'm like, no, put in as much characters as you can. Like, I just want to have a whole stable of NPCs to spew nonsense at me. I love that. I love that about Rare's games and like Greg Mayle's design philosophies. So if it has to be an RPG to like carry that through, so be it. But I would rather, yeah, really like one. I think you could do a lot with just a Donkey Kong based RPG with just Donkey Kong characters, like not even bringing in the rest of the DKU that's owned by Rare or whatever. But you could also do something on the Rare side too without Donkey Kong and have it be fulfilling and rich. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. All right, well, thank you for the call. Let's play number 20, Cameron.
Hey, hi, I'm Cameron of DK Vine. It's Silica Kong here, and I see that you both are doing a call sack episode, and I wanted to talk about a Donkey Kong-related thing that I've been doing for the past two-ish years now. To kind of get through this, like, I've heard about the Donkey Kong EPD rumors back in 21, and alongside DK's 40th anniversary in July, around November of 2021, I decided to go through a bunch of Donkey Kong games, and I've been kind of doing this for years now, so I've been kind of progressing through these a bit slowly. And some of these games I've been doing is stuff like the Super Nintendo Country Trilogy, the Game Boy Land Trilogy, DK64, the two pay-on handheld games, the Peg Swinger games, Return 3D, and soon Tropical Freeze for Switch. I've been keeping track of these games and when I started and beating them via the forums and personal Twitter account of mine, and I just wanted to kind of ask both of you if you have heard of other people, DK Vine viewers or not, if they started going through the backlog of Donkey Kong games in light of really just any sort of the Donkey Kong news we've done, whether it's the rumors or stuff like Donkey Kong's appearance in the Mario movie or the theme park. Anyways, that's all I have to say, and I hope that the both of you have a lovely day. Bye.
Thank you for the call, Silicon, also in our live stream chat. Hello. You know, I'm sure I'm kind of unconsciously aware of people doing this. I do, like, all the time in my job now of managing DK Vine, you know, I hear from Donkey Kong fans, and I know a lot of people just routinely go back to the games, and I don't know if anybody's been doing a straight, like, chronological replay through of the entire series, but I'm sure there are people out there who have had their passions for Donkey Kong kind of reignited because of all of the excitement around the Donkey Kong brand sans a new game. You know, we've had rumors now for a while, and we've had all of the accompaniment of a new game, of a vital video game brand, everything except the game, effectively, right? We've had merchandise. We have a theme park opening up. We have, like, the movie stuff, but no new game. And so I know, like, the only way to really scratch that itch is playing what we have and going back. And I'm sure people have been doing it other than you, but yeah, it's something I want to hear from, like, people who are rediscovering the Donkey Kong series currently in the past couple years, or discovering it for the first time, like the newbies, the ones who are just falling in love with Donkey Kong because of all of this, and saying, maybe I should check out the back library, because there's no new game for me to check out.
Yeah, that is also who I'd be, like, most interested to hear the perspectives from, because, like, I have a very difficult time, even though I'm sure I know plenty of people who have done, like, total series run-throughs, like, re-run-throughs of Donkey Kong Country, or the Donkey Kong series, because I feel like it's... I've been in this for so long and had so many friends who love the series, like, as much as we do, that it just, I feel like it's a... Like, I'm giving the M. Bison movie response of, like, this is a Tuesday for me, that somebody's right. replaying all the Donkey Kong games.
Yeah.
But the people who are just doing these deep dives entirely motivated by things like the Mario movie or, like, seeing stuff thrown up on NSO, I'd love to hear from those people.
Yeah, call in. Not for this episode. We're done taking calls. We've got four more to get through, and I can't, my bladder is full. I can't make it to 25th call, but yeah, I do want to hear from you down the line. It's an interesting topic, and it's one to, like, consider, like, both from people who maybe, like, have never played it, but also people who maybe haven't thought about it, who aren't as immersed in this as maybe even you are, Silicon. Like, it would be fun to hear from people who maybe Donkey Kong was never their favorite series, but they've gone back and they've, like, seen it from a fresh perspective, and that would also be cool to hear. So if you're one of them, call in and let us know how it's going.
Hey, DK Vine, John Tessier here, calling in for another episode of The Kongversation. And so I guess we're talking about any topic we want. So I'd like to talk about my dad a little bit, actually, because my dad is the reason why I love Rare games so much. Because when I was a little kid, my dad would play Rare games, and I was too little to really play them myself, but I would watch him play, and I would watch him play GoldenEye, Diddy Kong Racing, and he absolutely loved Banjo-Kazooie. And that's probably why I love DK Vine so much, is because it brings back great memories with me and my dad. My dad, unfortunately, passed away 2 years ago. So it's great to listen to these conversations and get those memories back, those great times with my dad. And I do have a slightly embarrassing story to tell about my dad, but I think it'll be okay. So one time, my dad got into this really big argument with my mom or whatever, and he unfortunately had to sleep on the couch that night. And I remember getting up at, like, 4 a.m. to go to the bathroom or something. And as I'm going to the bathroom, I see my dad, he's on the couch, and he's playing Diddy Kong Racing at 4 in the morning after getting into a huge fight with his wife. The way he calmed down, the way he relaxed and tried to think positively was to play some Diddy Kong Racing. And I really always appreciated that. I'm like, you know what, I respect that. I respect the DKR playing when you're not in a great mood or not in a great place. But I guess the topic I wanted you guys to discuss is, what is your favorite Rare moment or video game moment at all with your parents? Like, assuming your parents play video games with you. I know not every parent does. But, like, what is your favorite parent video game memory? Because I feel like parents playing video games with their kids is very important, and it leaves a lasting memory. Just like my dad with me in Rare. Okay. Anyways. Can't wait to hear the conversation. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you for the call, John. And thank you for sharing their lovely memories of your dad. And unfortunately, like, my video game memories with my parents, which I shared quite a bit with on the episode I recently did with Josh Wallen on Super Mario Bros. 2 and its kind of relation to Donkey Kong Country. All of my memories really are rooted earlier than Donkey Kong Country. And by the time Donkey Kong Country came out, my parents were starting to really drift away from playing video games until, like, the Wii came out and they were obsessed with the bowling. But I do remember renting Donkey Kong Country that first time and getting to like show it to them and thinking it was the coolest thing, like how far video games had advanced since we first played that like hand-me-down yard sale Atari together when I was super, super young, like a toddler. And showing them the second level of Donkey Kong Country with the rainstorm and just being like, look, look at what video games are now. And it was just this kind of amazing moment of like, look what you could have stuck with had you kept playing video games aside from like this random golf game on the Super Nintendo that you play with your friend's dad. That's my memory.
Yeah, this one's a difficult one for me because my parents were like super divorced from the world of video games, like pretty much entirely. Like I know, like recreationally, they'd like you know, they had played arcade games. We had like a forever broken Centipede arcade machine in our basement that they clearly got from somewhere. But just like no, any time I would try to like get them to play games with me or like get them invested, generally, like, just, it was a non-starter.
Yeah.
I'd say, like, I did at one point, like, we were, like, waiting to, like, get into a movie theater. My mom just, like, out of nowhere, like, asked if she could, like, if I could pass her Donkey Kong Country 3 on the Game Boy Advance. And, like, obviously, like, she wasn't very practiced with it, didn't quite know what to do, but, like, I appreciated seeing her try, and I have a memory of Dixie Kong's death animation playing when she ran into an enemy, and her just kind of saying something along the lines of, like, seeing her cry, and saying something along the lines of, oh, shut up.
Yeah, I think like my memories of my parents vis-a-vis video games or the DKU, like mostly it's not so much playing it with them, but like getting picked up from school the day Donkey Kong Country 2 came out in the US and my mom having it waiting for me in the car, or the day before we had Thanksgiving break, like we had 4 days off for American Thanksgiving, and so Diddy Kong Racing came out that day, that Wednesday, and so my mom picked me up early from school. It was early dismissal, and she had Diddy Kong Racing waiting for me, and it was just like warm, happy childhood memories of that. But yeah, unfortunately, like my biggest memories of my parents and video games are both like super early video games or Wii bowling. So,
and though despite all that, I think we do have something in common in that regard, where I think we can appreciate, like, though our parents weren't like into video games, they also like weren't discouraging of them, because we do have, sure, these warm memories of like going to stores and getting them, or like getting things as gifts, or just like, like, they were never the, like, video games are bad for you, so you're only limited to, like, this many minutes a day, or
right,
I'm not having that in my house, or... Because I did know people with parents like that, and I'm grateful that I grew up with people who respected that I had an interest and it wasn't harming anyone, so
especially that they supported era, it. Especially that era in the West where it was considered a toy and a distraction or something harmful, you know? And yeah, it never got in the way of my studies or in any extracurricular activities that, like, I still wanted to play outside. I never let it, like, consume me. And I think that kept it healthy in their mind, you know? I put in the work so they would never get to that point. Like, I carefully managed their perception of it. So, which is just a fun thing you have to do as a kid, too, is, like, how to play your parents, how to manipulate them so they do what you want. In the live stream, Andre says, my first console was the N64, so many people's cherished childhood memories of handing the controller to a parent to have them play through the hard parts was never a thing for me in the age of 3D movement and finicky camera controls. Yeah, it's not a surprise that my parents dropped off slightly before that and then came back for the Wii before dropping off again.
It's funny, I didn't read the comment, I was just listening to you say it, and the direction I expected it to go, just from my own perspective, was handing a parent an N64 controller and expecting, well, what the hell is this thing?
Right.
Because I'm a proponent, like, the N64 controller is not that hard to figure out, I think, as long as you, like, actually, like, have looked at one page of the manual and saw the way they show you how to hold it. But introduce that thing to somebody who's, like, never played a video game or has just completely divorced themselves from that world, and you've just handed them, like, part of an alien spacecraft.
I mean, I was pretty well-versed in video games, and I still hold the controller wrong. I don't care. It feels more comfortable holding it on the outside prongs. Fight me. The Snakefighter 64 says, I once told my mom that people didn't like video games being toys because of the stigma it gave them. And she said, who cares? Adults play with toys too. And yeah, that's true.
Good perspective.
Yeah. You know what? I want a ball pit, Cameron. We let the kids have the ball pits. Give me a ball pit to romp around in for adults. All right. Three more calls to take, so let's play call number 22.
Hey guys, this is TJ, and I'm calling in with a question related to Banjo-Kazooie. I've always wondered, you know, the first Banjo game, there's a lot of criticism around that game about how, as a duo, it really feels like Kazooie does most of the work. I used to almost joke that, feels more like you're playing as Kazooie, and your goal is to carry Banjo all the way to the end of the game. So I've kind of got two questions for you guys. One is that if they were to make a new traditional platform-focused Banjo-Kazooie game, what do you think they should do to kind of give Banjo a little more importance or prominence in what Banjo and Kazooie do? Because I know that's something Yuka Whaley addressed, or at least tried to address. They tried to give Yuka his biology, his chameleon skills, put those a little more at the forefront. He could blend in with things. He used his tongue for a lot of things. And that made Yuka and Laylee kind of feel equally as important on that adventure. But how should Banjo and Kazooie go about that? And also, while I'm at it, if they were to make another Banjo game, do you think they should have as big of a focus as Tui did on the two of them splitting up? Do you think a third Banjo should do that again, or do you think it should work with them solely as a pair? So, yeah, I'd love to know what you guys think about that. Thanks for taking the call.
Well, thank you for the call, TJ. You know, this is a hard one for me because I can't come up with any good ideas for how you could utilize Banjo as a more efficient part of the duo. I will say, like, I do prefer just walking around as Banjo. Like, I know most people go through Banjo-Kazooie talent trotting, but for me, like, I only use the talent trot when I have to. I really like the feel of going a little bit slower. You know, DK Vine done slow, I take my time. But yeah, I look at Yooka-Laylee, and that they did handle that a lot better as far as making, like, each one a more equal part of the buddy duo. But I don't know. I don't got any idea.
That's just a consequence of knowing the kind of game you're making.
You're right.
From the outset, whereas Banjo-Kazooie was kind of this slow evolution of the characters and concepts around them changing as the needs of the game became apparent.
For sure. Yeah. And like Kazooie just started off as like, oh, what if wings come out of Banjo's backpack? And then she just evolved into a character from there. But yeah, like, I don't know. What moves would you give Banjo, Cameron, if you can think of any?
That's the thing. I'm really not sure. Like, even Tui, like in Kazooie, he had the claw swipe, and they specifically, got rid of that move in Tui and made it, like, something that involved Kazooie so that you would have to teach him a separate move.
Right.
I could see integrating some more of the like backpack specialty stuff into Banjo himself. Like without having to split them up. Because I think that would kind of dovetail into my answer for the second question. I feel like they'd maybe cool it on the in a new game, the split up, just because I feel like at this point, any new Banjo game, I would expect to be a bit more reined in and playing it safe than Banjo-Tooie, because I know that as much as I love that game, it did overwhelm people.
Yes. Yeah. I could totally see why they had these split-up pads, why that was a big selling point of Banjo-Tooie. But the thing is, they're just more fun as a package, and splitting them up just was cumbersome at the end of the day. And you play a buddy duo 3D platformer, you want the duo to be this intrinsic unit at all times. I think was my takeaway from Tooie, ultimately. And that's what I thought Ukulele really got right, is, like, for any faults Ukulele has, the characters themselves, the way they play, the way they handled, and everything you could do with them, I thought was beautiful. I thought it was smooth as silk. I love just running around as Yuka and Lele as a tandem duo. So, yeah, just have that in a new Banjo-Kazooie game. Like, don't worry about splitting them up. They're Banjo and Kazooie. They're a unit. They're a selling point as a team. So, but yeah, maybe do more with this backpack. I don't know, you know. Still have Kazooie in the backpack.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not really game design minded in that regard. This is be where I like tag in Mitchell.
Right. And unfortunately, Mitchell is recording a podcast with Dustin right now, so can't do that. thank you for the call.
Hey, conversation. This is just Andre. So I've been making a more concerted effort lately to be active within the DK Von sphere, like suggesting the Greg Males episodes and listening in on more of the recordings and everything, and that was really fun for a little while, but it got me thinking more about the first Donkey Kong Country. So I went back and I reread the manual just to make sure I had my facts straight. And it never says one way or the other. But about the theft of the banana horde, it says a bunch of them come during the night and make off with the whole thing in just the one night. The Gangplank Galleon doesn't get specific mention, but I mean, look at the size of the banana horde for a marauding force to be large enough to make off with the whole thing in, you know, just a few hours, really. There's no other, like, vessel for the job other than the galleon, right? So, and you start the game and Donkey Kong leaps to action, you know, the very next morning, and the galleon is already, you'd never notice it at first. It's apparently most of the way back to Crocodile Isle, but, like, you play through the game, and the galleon's getting closer and closer, and you arrive at the galleon at the same time that it arrives to you, and you reach it, and it's full of bananas. I mean, I know there's... apparently, it left a detachment of Kremlings to stash all the bananas that couldn't fit on the ship, like, you know, where you fight all the bosses. But, I mean... like, so K. Rool did this whole operation and made off with his prize and then just, like, got bored and came back? Like, Donkey Kong lore, the joke. It's a fucking joke. And we have all wasted our lives. Bye.
Well, I think... thank you for the call, Andre. I'm sorry that you were making an effort to be more engaged with the community, and you had wonderful contributions to give, and then in just a short time, you were broken by the Donkey Kong Country Instruction Manual. Sorry, because you have wonderful contributions to give to the community, and I want to reclaim your faith. So I will try my best here to help you over this. So I think the biggest problem with the Donkey Kong Country story as it relates to what the Kremlings are up to and the banana horde theft is Crocodile Isle wasn't necessarily conceived yet. We didn't really know where the Kremlings were coming from. Yes, the Gangplank Galleon was a thing, but like, when I first played Donkey Kong Country in 1994, I was under the impression that the Kremlings just lived elsewhere on the island, maybe. And maybe they like, lived on the backside of the island or something. And K. Rool is just, like, sailing around, like, monitoring the situation. Like, we didn't know anything about Crocodile Isle until Donkey Kong Country 2. So, like, I make some allowances there. But I think what was happening was K. Rool was going to come from Crocodile Isle to basically like reclaim the entire banana horde. Like maybe he took some of it with him on the Gangplank Galleon, but like the bulk of it was just strewn about Donkey Kong Island and being guarded by the likes of Very Naughty and Really Naughty and Master Neki.
Yeah, we see in those like backgrounds of every boss fight, there's just these giant piles of bananas still there.
Yeah. So I think it was a logistics.
Like they clearly didn't get it all in one go.
Yeah. It was a logistics issue. It's like, we'll take some the night of, but we're really going to have to just sit upon this and basically do our best to guard them. And if the Kongs come for us, we're going to have to defeat them.
And you know what? Here's my little continuity cleanup. Yeah. Maybe he did make that first journey over to Crocodile Isle, like, get a bunch of bananas on Crocodile Isle and come back for, like, you know, the remaining, like, 7 shifts he'd have to do. And that's why you have bananas all over the place on Crocodile Isle.
Well, you also, in things like the Flying Croc, you've got the big bananas from Donkey Kong's Horde and how they lasted a year. That's another discussion about the properties of the bananas and the banana horde. And there's a lot of weird nuances we could get into there. But yeah, like K. Rool did get some of the horde, clearly, because some of it was left behind. So yeah, like I think you could make a whole game about this. Donkey Kong Country, but from K. Rool's perspective. And it's just like,
yeah, there's your Donkey Kong Country 0.
Yeah, Donkey Kong Country 1.5, yeah. You could, you know, you have these weird, like, games where...
That's how you get your Donkey Kong Simulator spinoff. You're K. Rool, and you have to figure out the logistics of getting all these bananas off the island before Donkey Kong notices.
Like, all these weird indie games that I get press releases for in my DK Vine email, where it's like a moving simulation. And I'm like, who the hell wants to play a video game about moving? The worst possible thing you could do. But if it was about moving the banana horde, sign me up for that. I'd play that in a heartbeat. Andre, there is no continuity quibble in the Donkey Kong universe that we can't solve together. I need you to believe this. Thank you for the call. Thank you for your contributions. You are a lovely individual. And DK Vine and the Donkey Kong universe fandom is all the better for having you in it, my friend. And we're all the better for having one final call to play so I can go pee. So, our last call, but thank you to all of our callers, sincerely. Remember, you can always call the DK Vine hotline at 1-202-630-VINE. Get on a future episode of DK Vine's Conversation. Let's play our final call, Cameron.
Hey, this is Spawnax. I'm calling about the Ask the Host Anything episode. Sorry if this is a little bit like too close to the deadline, but I thought I might as well keep it short and sweet and shoot my shot. So what I'm curious about is, assuming the Switch 2 or like whatever Nintendo successor system launches without a Donkey Kong game, number one, would you buy the launcher? Number two, if not, what sort of game would make you take that plunge? Would it be like maybe a DCU spinoff, like a Mario spinoff or something that's part of the DCU, so you want to cover it for the site? Maybe more stuff being offered in Nintendo Switch Online. I'm curious because I remember like a 2017 episode with Josh at the Geek Critique, where you sort of mentioned that like you're sort of unconventional, not really caring about the Switch because we had any like Donkey Kong news about it. So what about the Switch 2? I'm wondering what your mindset is going into this next console cycle. Thank you for calling, or taking the call rather.
Well, thank you for the call, and yeah, that's a good question because traditionally, I have never really jumped headfirst into a new console unless I had a very enticing reason to do so. I infamously didn't get a Wii until 2010 when Donkey Kong Country Returns came out. And yes, there are many DKU games out on the Wii before then, but my problem was that was when I was most detached from the DKU. And I was kind of away from it for the only time in my life. So it was Donkey Kong Country Returns that really brought me back into the fandom and really brought me back to DK Vine. So I waited there. With the Wii U, it was Tropical Freeze, obviously. With the Xbox One, it was Conker's Big Reunion, believe it or not. Don't regret that, by the way. Terrific little game that was, Project Spark. And yeah, like, things have changed, circumstances have changed, because I'm now doing DK Vine full-time, so I think any DKU game that comes out, even if it is a cameo game that doesn't really wet my whistle, if you will, I kind of have to get it for the site. I kind of have to get it to cover it. So I think just by the nature of where I'm at in my life and what I'm doing with DK Vine, I'm gonna have to get the next Nintendo console sooner rather than later, and I don't have the luxury of waiting for the Donkey Kong game. Now, I'm hoping the Donkey Kong game is just going to come out, you know, near launch, but if it doesn't, you know, I'm still going to have to get it as soon as Donkey Kong shows up somewhere.
Yeah, I historically am pretty bad with just when it comes to Nintendo hardware specifically being an early adopter, regardless of whether there's a like a gotta have game for me on the hardware, just because the track record is generally pretty great. Like usually there's, even if it's not Donkey Kong, there is something that will hit on a Nintendo system within the first like 3 months of life that makes me glad I picked it up early. You know, sometimes you get burned with that with like, say, like, hardware revisions, like the GBA or the GBA SP. And I feel like I'm more inclined to be careful with the, like, Xbox and PlayStation families of systems. God, the Nintendo Directs have just ruined my vocabulary. but that's because those libraries have a bit more parity with one another.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I know that if I don't get a Nintendo console, I'm going to just be so locked out of the conversation because there are just so many games that only are made on Nintendo's hardware because they have so many homegrown IPs and also just generally have some kind of hardware gimmick that third parties like to take advantage of that the other systems don't. So, like, that said, like, in terms of, like, other Nintendo franchises that aren't DK that will probably just, like, get me to go on board, like, I am just wholly invested in Splatoon at this point. It has become a series that is kind of, like, feeding the hunger I have for more Donkey Kong and DKU content by having a very similar sensibility to it. And I hope something like that comes along to keep me occupied if DK is going to wait in the wings for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I don't want him to wait in the wings, though, Cameron. It would be one thing if it was just like, oh, you know, Donkey Kong usually launches near the end of a system's life, Tropical Freeze notwithstanding. But no, we're overdue. And not as much as F-Zero, yeah, as the Snake Fighter 64 is pointing out in the chat, but
I would hope we at least hear something within the first year of life of a new console, if it's not a launch or launch window game.
I'll say this.
I would at least like to get an update.
Yeah, I'll say this. If what we said to Captain Radley holds true, and they just say, hey, we're working on a Donkey Kong game. We are. We're not ready to show it, but we're working on it. I'll get a Switch 2 at launch. I'll wait in line in the cold, in the freezing rain to get it, and I'll do it wearing a Donkey Kong costume. So everybody knows what I'm in line for. I'll do it, and I'll videotape myself. Oh, God.
This has been a File 2 production.